All right. YouTube thinks we're live.
Ooh, are we?
I think we might be live.
Awesome. Fantastic.
Maybe. Hey, there we are. We got video. We got sound. Welcome to Talking Heads, everyone. Episode 422, your once-week live show for the latest in beer and tech news. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Tom.
Well, I'm someone, I think.
I'm someone. There we go. I was in the middle of, like, someone had asked me a question that... I'll get into this in a moment after we do this intro.
Excellent. I think, therefore, I'm Tom. There we go.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining us on this Wednesday night or in podcast form over on Spotify or wherever your favorite podcasts are found. If you've never seen the show before, we talk beer, we talk tech, we talk... You know, it's been really negative as of late, so we're going to try to bring some positivity this week. I don't know if we'll be able to, but that's the goal of this week. Yeah.
We'll try. We put some effort into doing this. As Jeff tasked me, he's like, find some uplifting news. I'm like, oh, man, it's like he slapped me. It's like, what?
That realization just knocked him right across the face. And
I needed someone to tell me that, though. Like, me and my wife played some games, and we completed the games, and we were happy. There's some at least uplifting news that we accomplished.
Well, there you
something.
Go. Yeah,
and I think there's some joy you can easily find in the retro gaming world. Like, so that's
absolutely
so good.
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into some fun stuff later because I'm tired of all the negative news. I read enough of it. I don't want to dwell on it for another 2 hours. So today's going to be a good show. I hope.
Yes.
We do drink alcohol on the show, and if you're drinking along with us, alcoholic or not, let us know in the chat, and we'll give some early show shout-outs as we go along. Last but not least, if you'd like to take part in the Super Secret Chat and the even more Super Secret After Party, think about joining the Patreon. And that'll get you access to the exclusive Discord server, where you can chat with myself, Tom, Rhett, Cheese, Vince, Matt, all the hosts from Talking Heads, and join the awesome community that hangs out over there. See, even the Discord has a negative connotation to it right now. Everything we talk about is negative right now. I can't escape it. And it's driving me nuts.
Actually, Discord's backing down from the age verification thing. They're rolling that back. So that's uplifting, right?
I have a hard time with their language and with the way it's being presented, though. Let's talk Discord. Let me bring up a Discord article. Discord... walks back age verification. I think that was the title that I saw.
Yeah.
I
didn't. That's as far as I got a headline right now. I'm pulling up the chat so I can communicate with people as well. So
here we go. Discord pushes back age verification rollout following backlash. They have dropped their partnership with who was the subsidiary Palantir. You know, Peter Thiel, that.
Yeah.
Persona. they were partnering with Persona to do age verifications on Discord. And they have said, we have stopped our partnership with Persona and we are delaying age verification rollouts.
Yeah.
They're not stopping.
No.
They're just letting it die down so they can do it later.
Yeah.
That's all this is. It's still
coming.
We're
going to wait till y'all aren't mad.
It's still coming, so don't do this with the walks back on, is sorry about bull crap that they're trying to pull right now. That's not what... They're still doing it. And I don't want to let the news articles let them get away with that either.
Yeah. The reason I was easily distracted to the screen... just to the other side of me, I have a few friends. They work in the, they work for municipalities, we'll say. They work in government, and they have some interesting things going on. And me and my friend, who do OSINT work and cybersecurity work, they gave us the work. And this may be something we end up publishing. That's why I'm kind of being a little bit vague about it. But it's fun because we got to use some of the OSINT tools and we got to show them directly how we use them. This is all open source stuff.
Yeah,
and we may do some content around it because this started as Multibot that turned into OpenClaw and all the other stuff too. But we as cybersecurity people know how to use these tools in a more secure way. But we impressed the city people. We're like, you tore that whole idea we had apart and found all the people involved and did all the OSINT. And we shared with them how we did it with the multibot and how we've trained it to do all of that.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of funny. Using it, like, all the hype aside from things like multibot, there's actually something fun about it, of it doing the task that we wanted, because the OSINT clue, they could not figure out who owned several websites. Mm-hmm. And the clue was really easy. Multibot had no problem finding their same Google verification token that they had used for several sites and their HubSpot token, and then found it on the site. And then we found the person behind all the sites, because they'd done everything to domain obscure everything. They put everything on Cloudflare tunnels. So it was really hard to find who owned several things, but now we know exactly who owns all of it. We turned it over to them because of what was going on. And you're like, oh, that was fast. I think this whole thing took us almost 15 minutes. And they were like, they were thinking it's going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
And they're like, you guys just dissected this person in 15 minutes and you have his home address. I'm like, yes, we do.
Yeah.
We have his whole history. We have his business history. We even figured out why he's doing what he's doing with probably an 80% accuracy of why he wants to do things the way he's doing, and why he's obscuring it. It's kind of, we found a whole pitch deck, we'll just say. So it's going to be funny when, I don't know how we're going to publish this yet, but there's positive things you can do with all this Moltbot and all this stuff. Hype aside, it's still kind of cool that we can task a chatbot with just going out and doing things. Like, I know how to do all this stuff manually.
Yeah.
But that would have taken me punching in websites and going through DNS records and a lot of time. This is, it's kind of fun. It just knows to go do it. And it's like, here's all the info you were looking for.
Yeah, I've been tasked with similar things in the past through my organization. And you know, hey, we have this person who, you know, they're applying for a job, but they gave like this sketchy vibe, like, and you know, perfect job history, but none of their contacts are calling it. Can you like dig just a little bit into this person? Like, we kind of want them, but they're also a little like, meh. And yeah, 20 minutes later, I come back with a file about this thick and I go, no, don't get them.
Yeah. It's kind of nice, because when you use it as a time saver, human in a loop, and you can make sense of it. Yeah. Kind of a side tangent to this though, we actually talked about, and I don't think this is an actual term, but this is what we were joking about it in the group chat, SLM for small language model. And ooh, look at that. We got some, got a head on that thing.
That was spicy. That scared me. I cracked the beer can and it just goes. But then didn't escape the lip of the can. So
there we go.
Cool.
That's proper beer etiquette there.
Yes. So I'm going to try to do a proper nitro pour. We'll see if this works.
Yeah. But the idea of using smaller language models for very specific tasks so you can actually easily self-host them is also a cool concept. I think it's going to become popular.
Yes. So I don't know if it's showing up on camera all that well, but we got a really nice cascade coming down on the beer head there. So this is Sullivan's Brewing Company from Kilkenny, Ireland. Their Black Marble Stout Nitro Pour, batch brewed and packed in Ireland. So this is the last 3 weeks I think I've been on, someone in chat has said, I'm trying the new Guinness non-alcoholic. And I'm not a huge fan of Guinness, but I really do like, you know, Irish stouts and nitro pours and things like that. And I happened to be in the beer shop today, and this one caught my eye, and I went, you know, I've been kind of craving a really good, you know, nitro Irish stout. So I grabbed one. So that's what we have here. And it's gorgeous looking. Like that tone, that head is like a meringue top. Like, it's perfect.
It does look good. Yeah. I was craving the other day. I went to the beer store and getting the one-off variety beers. I don't want a second one. I've had part of this one. Right. I got the vanilla Java Porter. I like it. I'm too much of an IPA person probably, but the this sounded so good, and it is good. I'm happy with it. So I like sometimes something a little rich. A vanilla Java Porter by Atwater is quite a good beer.
Nice.
They have it on your side of the world, don't they? Atwater, is that a Michigan one?
I know I've heard of Atwater. I don't know if I've seen them in store locally. I think someone might have sent me one or two of them.
Okay. They're popular. They're popular here.
Yeah.
But I think they're Michigan based.
Okay. Yeah.
Somewhere you would think they'd see that.
Yeah. Novella Hub in chat has a brewing project, raspberry pistachio cheesecake, extra special delivery, sour smooth pastry stout, 9.4% out of Eau Claire, Wisconsin. We've got Reverend cracking a 2024 etymology from Fort George. You know what's hilarious? I almost grabbed that bottle today.
Oh, that would have been that would have been good coincidence.
Yeah, I was in the bottle shop maybe 2 hours ago, and I was just walking through, going, "Well, it looks good." Kind of like, you know, you like,
yeah.
Give me a onesie twosie beer that just sounds right. And yeah. They had a Matryoshka and they had an etymology, and I'm like, that one sounds really good. And I'm like, I flagged it in my brain. And I'm like, maybe I'll come back and grab that one. I ended up not, and I'll explain why later, maybe with the second beer. But yeah, I did see that today, and I desperately wanted to grab it. Blend of English, American, and red barley wine aged 12 to 20 months in whiskey and rye barrels, 13.1%.
Oh. So Atwater is based in Detroit.
Okay.
As a Detroit person, I should know that. I mean, I know they have a location there, but I've also been to Atwater in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they, on the bottle, it's got deposits for a lot of different states. So that.
And as Rev says, we've gone from crabs to Star Trek Voyager. So I don't know if you saw, but there's a new roguelike game out.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've not played it, but I did see it. It looked interesting.
Oh, it's good. It's really good.
So they did Star Trek right. So
they
I should play
did. That. This is the best Star Trek game in a very long time.
All right, maybe that's all I'll play.
Yeah. So basically it drops you into the Star Trek Voyager story, but it's a choose your own adventure style story. Your choices have consequences. You're slowly repairing Voyager after you've been thrown into the Delta Quadrant. The first couple of decisions are kind of made for you. You have to blow up the caretaker array. There's no real way around it.
It starts out the same.
Yeah. So it starts out the same, but from there, the decisions are yours, and they will present you scenarios that you've seen in episodes, but you choose your path through them. So,
do we have to get Neelix?
You don't have to get Neelix.
All right.
You could kill Neelix. When Neelix and Tuvok are involved in a transporter accident, and you have Tuvix, you can keep Tuvix, or you can kill Tuvix, or you can split them back up, or you can do like a whole bunch of other different things.
Hmm.
And so it's what decision would you make in this episode? You kind of have that freedom here.
You know, I watched Star Trek Voyager. Uh-huh. I've watched all of them. I cannot remember the final season very well. Pardon me, maybe I do have it, so I may all just rewatch it. But
yeah,
I was thinking that in my head when you brought it up. I'm like, I've seen the ads for it. Because at first I'm like, are they rebooting Voyager? What? No. Yeah. And then I seen it was the game. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So.
Yeah, it's kind of a roguelike. If you've ever played Faster Than Light, FTL, that's a very similar game mechanic to this.
Okay.
But it's really good. If you are a Star Trek fan, this is so good. It is such a good game.
I need to get lost in a game. I haven't done that in a while. You know, the last game I could truly... Well, no, two games I really got lost in that I just played continuous over the winter was The Witcher... which I never played that until like 2020. That was one of those COVID things. Uh-huh. Like, hey, I'm locked in.
Yeah, yeah.
This Witcher thing looks fun. And then, you know, they had the whole expansion pack on sale, and I played every side quest. I have some hours in that game.
Nice.
And the other one was Horizon Zero Dawn. Same thing. Ran through all the side quests and all that. They're just a fun game. I played those like back to back.
Yeah.
They were good.
Yeah. I did Kingdom Come Deliverance for a while. I dove into that one pretty heavy. Right after COVID, and then Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 came out. I've got about 40 hours into that, but I haven't. I lost the desire to keep playing about midway through because it did this weird thing where the first one you start out, you know, very poor peasant kid, and then you grow into like a knight or a noble and whatnot, and it's really involved story. But you're going to larger and larger cities. There's more and more to do. The second one's really weird because you start off with the same status that you had from the first game. It's a direct continuation, but then you get injured and you're nursed back to health. But you're nursed back to health in this very large city with lots of characters and lots to do. And then, no spoilers, there's an event that happens that now you're, you know, an outcast, you're on the run, and you have to run to the outskirts towns. And all of a sudden, 40 hours into the game, you're in a town with like 12 people and nothing to do, and all you can do is follow the main story. And I'm like, that's not how I was playing this game though. And I just lost all motivation.
Yeah, that just kind of kills it.
Yeah. So lately I've been going back through some 90s classics. Every December, I usually play back through Final Fantasy II and Final Fantasy III for Super Nintendo. I only did two this year. I still need to make my Final Fantasy III run. But I did just get done playing for the Nintendo 3DS, A Link Between Worlds. I went back through that one and dove through that. And now I'm doing Ocarina of Time for the 3DS.
I'm doing Link's Awakening because my son had it for Switch, so it's remastered, and I'm enjoying it. It's really good. There are things though, because I never played that one originally.
Yeah,
that era I was too involved in my business, so I never had any of those gaming systems during that era. I was working way too many hours, and anyways, there are things I don't like about the game, and it's because of that era. They just made things overly complicated because that was how the game like kept you engaged.
Right.
And it's like there's no hint for a couple of them. So I feel like I'm cheating when I use the hint. But also it's so like weird esoteric things. Like the only way to get the master key is to there's three people, three different things you have to kill in the chamber. They have to be killed in order, but there's no hint of the order.
Right.
And you don't even know they have to be killed in order. I have the map. It tells me that that's where the key is, but I can't get the keys. I kill the people. I'm like, well, key ain't here. Leave and come back.
I remember that dungeon. Yes.
Yeah. You remember that one. And those are those tedious things that I'm running into the game that I'm not looking up everything, but I'm looking up some of those things. I'm like, I don't love that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm cheating. I want to do it like, you know, solo that thing, but
Yeah.
I'll admit defeat, and I just say, what order is it?
Yeah. I've gotten to the point with most of the Zelda games, most of the mainstream ones, I can 100% them. I remember where all the heart pieces are. I remember where all the collectibles are. You know, obviously, I don't remember all the Koroks for Breath of the Wild. Screw that noise. Like, I'm not collecting 300 Koroks. I'm sorry. That's never going to happen.
Yeah.
That
game isn't even rational 100%.
Right. But for like A Link Between Worlds, which is essentially a sequel to Link to the Past for the SNES, there are a whole bunch of collectibles. There's pieces of heart, there's also Miamis or something like that. They're these little like crab-like shell creatures that you have to find. There's 100 of them in the game. I 100%ed that with no hints, and so I was pretty happy with myself with that. And like I said, now I'm going back through Ocarina of Time. I'll probably do Majora's Mask since I've got it. But that's actually not on the 3DS. That's on this little guy. I picked up an Ein Thor.
Nice.
And I am loving the crap out of this thing. So if we want
to, like, at the nice OLED display,
it does. Yeah. It's dual OLEDs, top and bottom.
Yeah. Dual.
Yeah. They're both touchscreen. And they both work independent from one another. This has been amazing as far as a game console goes. $320, so not terribly expensive. And I've seen some people do some really trippy things with this, like install the PC version of Steam, install Fallout 4, play Fallout 4 for PC natively on the top screen with the Android companion app for Fallout 4 for your Pip-Boy on the bottom screen.
Yeah, that is nice. I've seen the review of people doing that, and I'm like, that is pretty cool. Here's something back to uplifting. I think I sent you ETA Prime. Probably a lot of people have watched the videos. He talks about one of the videos that was released in the last couple of days is about how good PC gaming on Android is with the latest iteration. That is awesome. Like, it has become really good.
I haven't gotten there yet, but that is one of my plans for the Thor. I am going to do a full video on this, so probably sometime in March that'll be live, but I wanted to get a good amount of time in with it. So I'm playing games. I'm having fun with it.
Market research.
Exactly. That's the cool thing about my business is any beer that I buy is technically market research, since I review beer for a living. So
does your accountant let you write it off?
It does. He does. Yes.
All right. There you go.
So within reason.
Within reason.
You know, if I go to my favorite local brewery and I order the same beer 300 times in a year, that's not market research. That's just you going to the pub. But if I try a new beer that they have, that is market research, because that is expanding my palate. That is directly assisting with my job. So, yeah, when I go to pubs, I just have to order something different.
Well, sacrifices must be made. Exactly. Have our favorite thing every time.
Couple of super chats rolling in. Green chimes in with $5. So Canada lost the Olympic hockey tournament. Not here to gloat. Genuine question. Are y'all okay up there?
It is a weird world. That is not something I expected to happen. I'm just saying.
No. I did not expect the U.S. to clean up in figure skating and hockey both. I'm, that's just... That hasn't happened for a long time.
There's a joke in here about ice somewhere. We'll just leave it at that.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
And Vince. Thank you, Vince. Chimes in with $20. HTTP 422. Unprocessable. Unprocessable content. No bad stuff today. Only good stuff. Only awesome. Speaking of which, what time is it? I don't know. What time is it?
In my time zone or yours? I don't know.
Yeah. I apologize if that's a reference. I'm not getting that reference. Although, here's some good news. Here's some really good news. Okay. So I've
beer
talked...
time.
It is beer time. I have talked about this a couple of times on the channel before. Some are aware, some are not. My youngest son, he is 4 years old. We'll call him X. He is autistic and nonverbal. He is what they consider at this point a level three autism. Very, very strong impact. And he doesn't speak at all. He can sometimes communicate with the assistance of an AAC device. So like a button board with a whole bunch of words on it. You ask what time it is. And that's funny, because this week he did something that just made me smile. And he knows how to ask for food. You know, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, I'm whatever else. I want crackers, I want this. He discovered a button on the AAC that said, "What time is it?" And the reason that's funny is he watches a show called Bubble Guppies all the time. It's one of his favorite shows. And midway through every show, they do this little song break. And the song is, "What time is it? It's time for lunch. What time is it? It's time for lunch." And all of them dance around, and there's song going on and everything. Well, he walked up to my wife and goes, "What time is it? What time is it?" And she goes, "I don't know. What time is it? Is it 10 o'clock? Is it almost time for school?" And he goes, "What time is it?" And she goes, "Oh, it's time for lunch." And he smiled, and he goes, "You got my reference," like kind of thing. Like he connected on nice. Something that he was trying to connect with. And he was so freaking excited. That made my week. It was so cool.
That is great. People angry at NTP servers. That's, you know, that's the protocol that doesn't make people mad usually. That's...
Yeah. Ah, no. Okay, now I understand his reference. So Vince is working on an at-home self-hosted NTP server with a GPS dongle hanging out the back of your server rack. And so he is trying to write a project that you can host your own time server, but no real proprietary hardware or anything like that. He was tracking variants on his time server, and I forget what happened, but at one point his NTP was off by, you know, multiple hundreds of milliseconds at a time, and then he like dialed it down. Vince, do you care chiming in with what you were working on or what? I remember seeing the graph, and I remember you being pissed off about something, but if it's too much to type in YouTube chat, just hit me on the on Discord, and I'll I'll repeat it, but he was pissed off at NTP for something this week.
I've had an inordinate number of people ask me about setting that up. Why don't we do a video on it, which I think is strange. I mean, I think it's a cool project. It's just out of my usual scope of what I do. And I'm like, I don't really have the materials laying around to do it. And I don't really have a need for it.
Right.
People are like, but Tom, you really need it for your servers to be synced better. And I'm like, I don't need that level. I mean, there are things that need that level of precision. Tom isn't one of them.
Right. So that's... You and I have a very similar philosophy home labbing. Like, you know, we'll deploy things professionally. You know, we'll have clients ask us about certain things. Oh, yeah, I can throw it together for you. And it's like, oh, this might make a good video. Let me publish a video on this. Mm-hmm. I have things in my home that I use all the time. Obviously, I use, like, a Plex server and file sharing and TrueNAS and ZFS and Proxmox and all this other stuff. I'm really good at it, and I like sharing that because I use it every day and because I feel I'm an authority figure on that particular thing. I don't like publishing things that I learned about yesterday.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I don't know the whole story. I want to use it for a significantly long time. Like I said, I'm reviewing the Iron Thor right now. I'm going to have this device for at least 6 weeks before I publish a video on it because I want to know about it.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of catching up to do when it comes to gaming on Android.
There's a lot of little nuance to it. I didn't even know before watching that video by ATA Prime, it was as capable as it was. Like, I knew it existed, but watching him go through and play the games, like, there's a Steam thing that runs the PC version of Steam through an Android, through an emulator, and it runs fast, and it runs on these devices. That actually became really interesting that those layers not only exist, but they're fast. Because it brings me to another question that I can't really make any sense of after watching that video. Do you know what I thought of next? Is like,
what's that?
Why does Windows on Snapdragon suck so bad? Like, Steam can figure out how to run x86 on there fast and a slower processor than Microsoft has in these Snapdragon systems. And no one can buy Snapdragon systems. Microsoft can't even make their own software work properly on it.
Right?
Like, and here's like the gaming companies like, yeah, watch us do something far more complicated than Excel and do it well.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of on the topic of, I didn't do videos until I really dove into and use it. I really dove into Proxmox to learn a lot of ins and outs, things I love, things I hate, but the rules and permissions, took the time to learn them, took the time to learn how to set them up properly. Mm-hmm. Did a video on setting up PBS server. I'm a little disappointed in folks because we were cybersecurity friends, were talking about this because he's like, oh, that video should be killer, should do a lot. No, it did not get a lot of views. And the reason why is because people solve problems in Linux the same way most of the time. They stop when it works, not when it's secure. And if schmod 777 or run it as root doesn't fix it, it doesn't need to be fixed. And once one of those two solutions is come upon of open up all the permissions or run it as root, that's where people stop a lot. And I feel that's where the Proxmox community is.
First off, Tom, they scare me. How dare you call me out like that, okay?
Yeah. As someone pointed out here, Windows doesn't exactly run well on x86 either. So touche, you're right. So I guess it's probably not the chip that it's on that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because last time, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about the fact that they can't get vulnerabilities out of Notepad. So you're right. It's probably not an issue.
Exactly.
Not the issue anyways.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Funny, but the setting up Proxmox backup server with the proper permissions is extra steps. Run it as root is the fast path to this. I did stump Wendell though.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, that I've not been able to do that before.
Yeah, that's always a feather in your cap. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did the video on how to do Proxmox backup server, and I found a bug that I need to go post in Proxmox forums. Mm-hmm. Even as Wendell doesn't think that's a bad idea either after he looked at it. Because there is not a way to set permissions of a container inside the UI for TrueNAS, you set the permissions from the command line. Because container permissions are a mathematical equation. They start at a high number, and that high number is the same as user zero in the host operating system. So what is root is zero on, you know, your is the first one, and then root is that high number, and then backup is 34 numbers higher than that. So you can actually do a calculation to figure out where all the user mappings are. They're the same IDs, But they start at a higher number.
Okay. So
because that higher number doesn't exist in TrueDash, you can't go to the web UI and type in like, hey, this user ID as a number owns this file system. So you just do it from the command line. Pretty straightforward once you understand it. You're like, you're setting all permissions to be owned by this ID. And that's what you do when you set up Proxmox backup server in a container on TrueNAS. It works brilliantly. It has all the right permissions. It gives no errors when you set it up. If you try to reconnect it, it gives you a permissions error. And Wendell went through a few things. He's like, no, it's just this. I'm like, no, no, I tried all of those. And I sent him a list of the commands I ran. He goes, ooh. And I even ran these commands. And it's really weird. It won't let you reattach to existing data.
Because I have ran into that.
But if you go in and manually edit /etc/proxmox/data config, whatever that file, the exact file, you can just punch it in and add it to the config and it reads it fine. So you can reattach it via the command line, no problem, but it won't validate the permissions. And I thought, okay, this is a bug in Proxmox. So I mounted it outside the container, like inside of itself in the container instead of using a mount path. Uh-huh. It mounts fine. So the problem is definitely not Proxmox. It's some permission issue with ZFS mounted data sets in LXC, or in this case, Incas containers, but which are really LXC containers, and that nuance we can argue about later. But it's just a weird bug. And even Wendell's like, it shouldn't do that. And I was like, I agree with you all day.
That's funny.
I'm happy that Wendell looked at my command structure and says, you seem to have done this right.
Yeah.
But I got to post it. It's the only puzzle I've had with it. I don't know. I don't think Proxmox will tell me what the problem is because, like, if I go to their community, maybe someone will have a suggestion.
Yeah.
It's just a weird problem. The fact that you can manually edit back and it works perfectly fine with no errors tells me there's not really an error in the permissions. All of it mounts fine.
Yeah.
So weird. And why does it create an empty one? It just can't have data in it. If you delete all the data out, you can mount it again. It won't give an error. But there's data in it. It doesn't work.
There's got to be some latent file or configuration or something that's just left over somewhere as a placeholder. Because I've ran into this with not with mounting TrueNAS onto a container, but I have ran into this where I've removed my TrueNAS server as a mount point as a file store from Proxmox as a whole. And if you try to add it under the same name, it gives you like a 500 permission error. And you have to go in and manually root out that connection.
I see something in the comments. I will say, yes, let's just put Yakta and Wendell together on a video stream. I just want to watch them fight about Seth. I don't know who's going to win. I don't know who's right.
Yeah.
I just want to watch them do it.
Yeah.
Because and I think Yakta's right. Wendell definitely got stumped on some of the Seth stuff where I think he was hitting the edge of what he knows about it. It's not a dig at Wendell at all. It's definitely some interesting. He also found some really interesting problems with firmware with those drives. So at least that's my understanding from his video on that topic. I don't know if you watched it.
Yeah.
He had some specific bugs he found with the firmware with those drives was related to Seth. Kind of interesting.
Right.
I do not declare myself a Seth expert. I like watching experts argue, though. So.
Yep. Yakto's our resident Seth guy.
I might learn something.
Yeah. Cosworth chimes in with a $2 super chat. Android on the X79 blades win. That's a great question. Probably never, simply because Android on x86 never really took off, and I don't think there's been too many developments on it since then. But if you ask me, like, if I were to get Android on an ARM device in my rack at some point or whatever else, like, look, I've been playing with a lot of ARM devices lately. I just did a review of the Dell GB10, which, speaking of having things run on Linux on ARM faster than they do natively on Windows on x86... that was a great example. The games run freaking flawlessly on that thing. I don't know if this is going to be a good year for Microsoft. Like,
I'm fine if they burned in hell.
They came in floundering towards the end of the year. They've got exploits for every application. They're simply vibe coding new features that no one wants. they're burning money developing Copilot. Copilot is only capturing 1% of the global LLM market anyway, so tens of billions of dollars down the drain. Brain trust evacuation over there with a whole bunch of firings and layoffs and reassignments and things like that.
Including in their security area.
Including in their security. Including
they reshuffled some people.
Yeah. Like there's some things behind the scenes that I've heard that aren't great. There's some things development-wise that I've heard that aren't great. They're not doing what consumers want. They just put an AI bro gal in charge of Xbox who's not even a gamer.
I've seen that too.
Yeah. And it's just one misstep after another. Let's ride or die with AI. Well, guess what? Eventually that means die, because I don't know how much longer you're going to ride.
Well, and we're seeing such a good rise in even dedicated Linux operating systems to run games. We're seeing the fact that even despite some goofiness I've run into running Pop! OS with Wayland, I'm able to get Steam working pretty good on it.
Yeah.
I think it worked better under standard Ubuntu, but whatever, we're splitting hairs at some point.
Right.
The fact that there's more than one operating system that you can run on there. It was Bazite, and what's the other one?
Bazite's the big one for gamers.
There's one other one I remember people mentioning as well. It's like, I think it's a fork of Bazite, because welcome to the Linux community where everything gets forked. But either way, there's multiple places we can play games. And
rather than forking it, why don't you just submit code to Bazite and improve that one?
But what happens is, as I've learned, the developers say no. And that's how we end up with the Pop! OS people completely rewriting the Cosmic Desktop, because they couldn't get along with the people at GNOME because they wouldn't accept the request.
Right.
But I also learned a little bit. Jay followed that pretty closely from Learn Linux TV and would explain some of that. What I found really interesting was when I was running the older, before they did the Cosmic Desktop, the Pop! OS stuff, I was like, this is like a more polished version of GNOME. And Jason's like, you're actually kind of wrong about that, Tom. These are all the features in GNOME that are built in but turned off by default. And all they're doing is enabling all of them. The code exists. They didn't add this code to turn these features, like simple ones, like do not disturb for notifications. It's like, I thought that was the enhancement. They go, no, they're just turning it on. You can actually go in and install it. But the GNOME people are like, no, that stays off unless someone requests it. And there was weird arguments back and forth. He would point me to the spots where these would be debated. And I was just like, and I may be getting some of the nuanced details wrong, but basically it was this constant fighting. That's why the people at Pop! OS were decided, screw you guys, it's too hard to fight with you and get code submitted.
Yeah.
So we're rewriting the desktop.
Yeah. But the problem is it just adds to the fragmentation at that point. And we want, when you're within 7 pixels on your cursor of an icon, for it to highlight, not within 12. And we're going to go make our own desktop environment with blackjack and hookers. And it's like, can we just decide that 7 is okay? Or 12 is okay? And maybe you can't tweak things down to the nth degree, but if you put development time where it belongs and you actually collaborate on things instead of going, screw you, I want my icon to highlight at 12 pixels, and you're going to go and make your completely own fork of Linux, your own desktop environment that is no longer compatible with anything else that anyone makes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe we should just get along a little bit better. Maybe compromise a little bit more.
And I see people talking about it. We had GNOME 2, and GNOME 3 was awful, so now they forked it to Mate from GNOME 2.
Right.
And then, now we have... And unfortunately, a lot of times when people talk about Linux distros, what they're really talking about is the nuance between which desktop environment you love or hate.
Right.
Because it's all the same kernel.
Yeah.
That was I did my video on running containers, and that was a big part of the nuance. I tried to use the most proper words possible to say that, anytime you run containers, whether they're Docker or LXC containers, that they share the kernel, and the kernel is Linux.
Right.
Even though you're installing Alpine Linux or Debian Linux, it's all Linux. It's the user land that's different, and that's where the war is always at, is the user land. At least we've agreed on the kernel. It's
right.
It's all over the place after the kernel.
Well, no, we haven't agreed on a kernel. We have Linus at the top going, this is the kernel.
Yeah. Yes, pretty much.
Anyway, today's episode does have a sponsor, and of course, that is Meter. While I enjoy tinkering with my home lab and all of my networking equipment, if you run a business, you've probably got better things to do with your time. That's where Meter comes in. Meter delivers an all-in-one networking stack that bundles everything you need into a single package, including high-speed wired and wireless networking, power delivery, firewall and routing, and even cellular, all in a single integrated solution that's built for performance and scalability. Meter handles everything from designing a custom network for your business and even negotiating with your local ISPs to get you the best rates on internet connectivity. All of that shows up in a single cloud-based dashboard, giving you clear visibility into every layer of your network. Meter also ships the hardware you need today and will automatically upgrade your hardware as time goes on, ensuring your users and your business always have the tools and connectivity they need. Whether you're starting a new business, expanding to new locations, or simply modernizing an aging network, let Meter take care of the hassle for you. Visit meter.com/craftcomputing to book a demo today and see how Meter can help out your business. Again, that's meter.com/craftcomputing, and a huge thanks to Meter for sponsoring today's episode. Thank you, Meter.
Thank you, Meter.
Thank you.
I also like that previous D-Chads, where are you?
Vince.
where's our FreeBSD folks?
Where's our Double Linux friends?
Yeah. I was a big fan of FreeBSD in the early days, and mm-hmm. I still liked it. Once I learned jails and things like that and FreeBSD stuff, which is containerization before Linux heard of containerization. And so FreeBSD was always good at doing it first. Linux always did it better.
So. Yeah. Jason says, I'm going to fork Meter and call it Yard.
Ooh, that would be a great competitor. Just throwing it out there. I like this.
Oh, man.
Fun times, fun times.
Yep. So what else do we have that's not negative or inflammatory? Because if I keep talking about Microsoft, I'm going to have to turn on that rant alert button.
Let's see. I'm going to say, and I mentioned this, I think, just before the show, there is a good level of positivity, I think, in the home lab community, where people are more and more into helping each other out. It's, you know, because of the world around us and certain pressures, it is becoming but us versus them. But I think that also drives community, because I love that more people are going, hey, I really got to think more about self-hosting this. I want to think more about data sovereignty and understanding my data. And, you know, there's people like Lewis Rossman really beating the drum out there going, hey, you know, be aware of this. Yeah. And Cory Doctorow giving us the word enshittification, so we have a word to encompass what these big companies are doing. So I think building a better and new and open internet feels more and more like a possibility as we get more people like the audience that's watching us on board with it. I think that's kind of an overall positive vibe. I think that there wasn't really even 8 years ago a much self-hosting on YouTube content. Like there wasn't much around that. If you search for self-hosted YouTubers or doing that, it wasn't much of a concept when I started in 2017. I was doing a lot of firewall videos and I was talking about what could be or what was self-hosted things.
Yeah.
But now that we have a terminology around it for home labbing and self-hosting and data sovereignty and stop the enshittification, I think it's cool, because as we develop the terminology, we develop the community around it, mm-hmm. And people, you know, going, hey, I can do this at home. And then combine that with the mini PCs, because my early days and yours as well, your current days as well,
there's
a whole lot of rack-mounted servers. But for a lot of people that don't have a spot to put these, being able to get these mini PCs mm-hmm. that are quiet, affordable, well, within reason, and low wattage are pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I think that's another big boom for the community. I actually had someone reach out, another advertiser, sponsor / potential. They want to send me, it's another company coming up with a cool, I think it has 2 or 4 NVMEs, 4 full-size drives, and a spot for a full-size graphics card.
Oh.
So it's a NAS that is able to do the processing and all that.
Yeah.
And it's got, I think, a Ryzen processor in it.
Okay.
And expandable memory. And I'm like, this is actually not a bad design, relatively low priced, and the good and bad, of course, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, the mini PCs obviously are not a form factor. They're not like mini ITX. They are their own proprietary, if you get a B-Link or any of these. And they did that kind of thing where I think it's like an Ace Magic, like one of those off-brand B-Links.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I don't know, good or bad on that, because I like the compact design you get, but there's a lack of serviceability outside of, cool, they gave me some slots for NVMEs, and they gave me a couple slots for memory.
Yeah.
But then again, do we really, how much serviceability do we have? Once you buy the processor, for the most part, with a mini ITX board and build it, do you ever swap that processor out? How often does that happen? You know, it's rare. I was actually looking at my old mini NAS, which is sitting on a table next to me. It was the free NAS one, the first one they came out with, that has an Atom processor.
Uh-huh.
I don't think there's another processor that fits in this board, even though I think this early model one.
No, the Atoms aren't socketed. That's
okay.
Well,
the
Atoms
are not. Okay.
Yeah.
But even if it is a mini ITX, and what's the likelihood of me trying to buy another mini ITX for it? It's just
right.
Yeah, I kind of just retired the system. And I'm bringing it back to life for a backup of TrueNAS video. Nice. I want to show that you can run TrueNAS on a extremely low-powered system, and it happens to be a low-powered system I have. So I'm going to show what you can or can't do on it. You can slowly back things up is basically how that story goes. But you can back it up. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think there's a lot of market potential out there right now with things like mini PCs, but...
And 10-inch racks?
10-inch racks, yeah. 10-inch racks are really huge right now. I haven't dove into one yet, but I've got some evil ideas in the back of my head about, like, trying to reach out to some of the mini PC partners that I've worked with over the years and going, like, man, could we come up with a modular system where someone could buy a backplane or an IO adapter or something like that, design it for a 10-inch rack where we could slot in compute nodes as we need them. And we could buy, you know, everything from a socketed Ryzen or Intel chip down to, you know, embedded processors or mobile chips or whatever else. So basically like a universal carrier of a compute node that would plug in and have access to storage. You know, obviously very similar to like the Supermicro Micro Cloud that I'm obviously in love with, but let's bring it into the modern age, but also price it at a point that makes sense for a lot of this kind of thing. You know, I think people are willing to pay, you know, mini PC prices, $300-$500 for a mini PC if it's got, you know, a Ryzen 8945HX, you know, a 16 core Ryzen or something like that. Let's design a backplane that it can plug into, that it gets all of its storage and everything else from, and make it 10-inch rack compatible. And boom.
And I think B-Link kind of comes close because they have that dock that gives you the PCIe.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of cool, too. And if more of the companies offered that. Zima kind of did a thing, you know, where they had a slot to plug into that give you a little bit more expandability.
I'm literally sitting on... Hey, look, Zima's. Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, they
I had them on my desk today.
Yeah, I know. I have one of those. And as I'm debating if I'm going to do the TrueNAS backup video with the Zima or if I'm going to do it with the FreeNAS. I like the FreeNAS, but I think the Zima, I want to show people if this is a very approachable, hackable project where you can build it out of spare parts. I just happen to have this laying here, so it shows the I can survive on the 2-core Atom. But then again, the Zima, I think, is actually a little bit faster than that and probably a little bit more power efficient.
It is.
Because it's newer.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, the original Atom, I think, was like a C2500 or something like that. The Zimas are using 4-core Celerons. So, and significantly newer.
I do like, if we say Ace Magic 3x times on Wise Camera, will John the Net Guy will appear. Do you know the whole controversy? And don't get me wrong, I'm not playing it light that they were shipping malware or whatever they were shipping with it.
Yeah.
But to the same extent, I think it's because they're inept, not malicious.
I got that as well. I've met with them a couple of times. Most recently, last CES, so a year ago, 2025, really nice people. You know, over there. This was the issue that I gather is they got they likely got a deal to, like, hey, we'll give you $2 for every PC that you install our software on, which is not all that uncommon in a lot of realms. But that software just happened to be very malicious. So sometimes these things happen. I've talked about, you know, supply line infiltration. I've experienced a couple of times. My favorite example is we had a lineup of LG Blu-ray drives, Blu-ray ROM drives, or DVD writers or something like that, that they were infected from the firmware was infected at the factory with some malware that would automatically install an ad delivery network to a Windows XP machine. So we got this batch of like 300 machines, and a week later, all of them had this malware on them. We went, what the crap? And we went through and we uninstall it, and it showed back up. And so we took them all offline and started tearing them apart and go, what the hell is at? We did a complete wipe on one of them. And it turns out the Blu-ray drive or the disk drive at random intervals was mounting a USB thumb drive, so an HID or a USB drive, and auto running a malicious package to install this software on the PCs. It required a complete firmware wipe of the DVD writers to eliminate this problem. And we had to work with the OEM that we bought all these. They were like white box systems. We had to work with the OEM to get a hold of LG to get a new firmware for them to get them all applied. So,
I can remember this came up as I follow some of the vintage computing subreddits. I just like to see the posts of the day. You know, show me something from my youth. Mm-hmm. It made me feel young again. back when it was setting dip switches on the IRQ5 and 3F8 and they had a Sound Blaster. On there, but it brought up right away what I remember. The Sound Blaster came with 3 floppy disks, and they shipped a ton of them with a virus on the floppy disk. we had screwed up so many computers that way. Once again, it was like, how did this happen?
And
at the time, I think FPROT was what we were using. It was that Finnish AV software. It's cool command line DOS tool. We used to scan, we're like, oh no, the Sound Blaster. We had to contact Sound Blaster. We actually got through to them, and they had used a third party supplier that was infected to mass make the floppies.
Yeah.
And they found it and confirmed it. It was all phone calls back then. It was like,
yeah,
you dialed up to get your email alert.
Well, but
so we just spoke when
we discovered this, I think somewhere 2010, 2011, so very late generation Windows XP.
This is like 99 or 98.
Yeah, so. we were still pushing out XP to a lot of machines, starting to get Windows 7 installed. We skipped Vista entirely, thank God. It happens.
220H IRQ5 DMA3.
Yep. Jay sends in $20. Thank you so much, Jay. Much appreciated as always. Data Sovereignty Feel Good, Arata and Co., which makes e-ink tablets I use, just released a self-hosted private cloud package. Locked down data? Nope. You can do whatever you want with it. Sad that being prosumer is surprising. Right?
Yeah, but we celebrate when it is.
Exactly.
You know, people give me crap about liking a lot of the interface stuff, but I'm like, please show me the next company making this many products that you can self-host the controller, self-host the application, and everything else. I mean, it is it's rare. There's like MikroTik, but they don't have the same breadth of like control plane. They make a good product, but that's it. We've now run out the list. We've talked about Unify, we talked about MikroTik, and maybe someone will mention Grandstream, but their whole reseller program is confusing, and their website looks like someone who doesn't know how to make a website.
Yeah.
all the photos on it are really low res. So trying to figure things out, I'm like, did they know you can make full high res photos available on your website? And it doesn't even cost much. Clearly no one told them. I haven't looked in a while. Maybe they fixed it. Anytime I see websites that are just absolutely lacking in depth for a company, like, why aren't you putting information on your website?
Yeah,
I've gone through the effort of looking at it. Please give me some data.
Jay, which are you using the Super Note tablet, or which one are you using? I know I've seen the tablet that he has. It's really cool. It's an e-ink display, but it's a digital tablet that is purely handwriting driven. And so if you're the kind of person who keeps notes by hand, they're pretty awesome. So yeah, which model do you have? I'm curious, and I'll share it out. Green chimes in with another $5. Thank you very much. Recently used Zima OS on an old Haswell i5 ITX machine with 8 SATA drives. It really is usable.
Cool.
Yeah, I liked Zima OS when I glanced at it and did a brief review with it. They didn't have ZFS at the time. I don't know if they still do, but if your goal is like a JBOD with like a ButterFS or something like that, it's very, very usable. That, and I really liked the interface and the app library that they had. It was super intuitive, very easy to use.
They did a nice job on that.
Yeah.
Like, it looked very polished. I think the only problem I found with it at the time I tested it, and it's been a while and it's probably matured then.
Yeah.
The RAID setup was quirky. A lot of it still had to go to the command line to get it working mm-hmm. properly. And they didn't have any clear defining ways. They were pulling in Docker apps, but there wasn't a clear defining way of how to back up the data. I mean, I love the automated setup, but yeah. I'm like, where's my data?
Right.
How can I know that if this thing fails, I can get my data back?
Yeah. Where's the storing? Is it on the RAID? Is it even redundant at that point? Yeah, they weren't really clear with... They got Docker working, and it downloaded, and it ran. But then half the apps didn't have dedicated interfaces, and then, yeah, the RAID setup was a little funky.
Yeah. Did you ever do this, Jeff? Did you ever review Zima with a Zima, though? Because that would be, like...
I considered it.
I
have had a Zima on the show before.
Okay.
I will confirm that. I did not buy a Zima to review the Zima board.
All right.
But, gosh, this had to have been 2018. Because it was John and I on the show. I remember he brought over a Zima. That was a weird show, because I think that was the same show that someone dropped like a $200 super chat, and I ended up doing a shot of whatever he chose out of my liquor cabinet, which was like peppermint schnapps and tequila or something like that. Like, it was, look, I was hard up for money at the time. Okay.
Yeah. I won't drink anything, but $200 is $200.
Yeah, exactly. pretty sure it was peppermint schnapps and tequila. Yeah. It was Joe.
Fun.
Joe Colvin? Colvin? Culver? Colvin? Something like that. We named the shot.
Money for shots. I remember those days.
Yeah. My price is higher now. That's all I'm saying.
we've matured. There's cost of living has gone up.
Yeah, the economy.
The economy's different. You know how much memory costs these days?
Right.
Hard drives. You know, it's a shot. The only thing that hasn't gone up is the price of liquor.
Joe Colvin. Well, I was right. Yeah, it was Joe Colvin. Thank you, Skull. And Yakto says, I mean, pickle beer. Yeah, I have done things on this channel.
Because they got those pickleback shots, too, you can get. And those are...
Yeah, I refuse to do the pickleback shots. My brother-in-law is a huge fan of Jameson with a pickleback, and I just can't. But, Yakto famously made me drink a pickle beer in exchange for an RTX A5000. So I drank a pickle beer.
Yeah. It's got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
My wife introduces a lot of people to Malort. that's her thing. She brings a bunch of the little Malort things. And then she goes to a lot of tech conferences, and apparently the tech community has not been infected yet with Malort. There's a lot of people just don't know what it is.
I'm very aware of it. I've never had it. I have smelled it.
I think my favorite description is gasoline, used Band-Aids, and hairspray mixed in a shot.
Yeah.
But other people seem to be unaffected by it, which puzzles me. So there's two reactions.
Yeah.
There are the extreme and the I don't think this tastes like anything. I don't know what is with people's taste receptors that they go, yeah, that wasn't good, but I don't care. Yeah. You know, it wasn't that bad. And then there's the people who the first taste of it hits their tongue and they're like, this is bad. And a few minutes later, like, it still's there.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it doesn't kind of it doesn't really go away.
Yeah.
There's a lot of regret when you have Malort.
Yeah, no, it is something that I don't want to do. Like, just like I don't want to do Durian fruit in Taiwan. Because like, yeah.
I have done it.
You no, have?
I wasn't in Taiwan though.
Yeah.
Someone brought it to work.
Yeah, we went to a night market. And so I had every opportunity to do the fried octopus and everything else that goes along with a Taiwanese night market. I don't think it's something that I want to do. Now, I tried a lot of food when I was there. We tried so many different things. In fact, there's a full video that we got shot on the channel that I never ended up publishing of me, Jordan, and Rhett sitting in a hotel room trying about 30 different snacks that we had bought in Taiwan. I'm not Asian one to yuck anyone's weird. Yum, okay?
But their Asian snacks get weird. There's a lot of fish snacks.
Right. I'm not one to yuck anyone's yum. But
yeah.
At the same time, I'm going to call it what it is. The people who like Malort, there's something wrong with your head.
Yeah.
It's not an acquired taste. It's a bad taste. And looking at a lot of the Asian snacks, we tried scalloped Lay's potato chips. That was awful.
Mm-hmm.
That was near vomit for 2 out of 3 of us. And in fact, I know Jordan is still reeling from that one.
Just the thought of it.
Just the thought of it. They were Lay's potato chips. They were cut, fried, everything else. They looked like Lay's. They did not taste like Lay's.
When I travel, I generally avoid too weird of foods. So, yeah.
I like taking in culture and trying different foods. And you know, when I go traveling, I look for local spots. You know, I don't want to try, you know, I'm not going to go to Applebee's if I go to San Francisco. I want to try what's a local place down in the Mission. Like, that's what I want to do. But at the same time, I also have lines that I just don't want to cross. Durin's on there. Malort's on there. Like, I don't need those. I know I'm not going to like them. It's not going to be enjoyable. I'm not going to look back and reminisce about this experience. No, it's going to be crap, and I don't want to do it.
Yeah, we had the... they were packaged Durin fruit things that were brought into work. So you'd open a package, and it smelled like the I can't describe that smell. It smells like Durian fruit. It's not pleasant, but it did taste good. I ate a few of them. I was shocked that it tastes as good as it did.
Yeah.
It does not smell like something that would, yeah. Dried squid. You know, cooked squid is fine.
I've done squid.
I don't mind eating squid. I don't mind eating all the food. Dried doesn't seem to have as much flavor to me. It's a little crunchy. I tried it. I would not go out of my way for it.
Scallops is in the potato? No. Scallops is in the muscle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Those things, yes.
Yeah.
Scalloped potatoes are good.
Scalloped potatoes are delicious.
Scalloped mussels.
Mm.
Not as a chip. It's the crunchy stuff. And they're all, most of the Asian stuff has a ton of MSG in it, too. So that's the primary ingredient. We don't know how to make this taste good on its own, so we're just going to add a bunch of MSG so you'll like it.
Yeah. Ian's in chat. Hello, Ian. Have you tried Finnish Spunk? I have not tried Finnish Spunk.
Google search history there. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
New idea for a Who's Line round at Computex involving stinky tofu. See, I've got lines, man. Food is not something that I like to mess with. Like, I will try local cuisine. Yeah. If it looks like it will be appealing to me. If I know for a fact I'm going to vomit. You're not getting close to me with it. It's not going to happen. I tried all of the snack foods because I went, a potato chip is just a potato chip. I can muscle my way through a potato chip, pun intended. Yeah. Scallops are good. Like, I love seafood. I love clams, oysters, scallops, mussels, all kinds of seafood. In fact, we're going to GTC here in a couple of weeks, and I'm going to go back to Original Joe's in downtown San Jose, and I'm going to get their seafood marinara, which is freaking phenomenal, and it's got scallops and clams in it. It's spaghetti with marinara with scallops and clams and a little bit of salmon, and it's one of the best dishes that are there.
You know, I was in... When I was in Deadwood for the Wild West Hacking Fest, it was kind of funny because all the restaurants have very limited menus there. You can get bison. You can get more bison. You can get some beef. You can get some pork. And it was basically the same menu. But one of the places had fish. And I was like, oh, there's fish. And my friend who was with me leaned in. He goes, I just want to point out how far we are from any coast.
Yes.
And I just kind of laughed. He's like, you may or may not want to order that. I was like, fair. I'll go with the pork.
As someone who grew up on the Oregon coast or within an hour of it with family that was beachfront, who's also a certified diver, who on multiple occasions would go out to the jetties, pick up crab and then boil them on the shore. I don't eat seafood if I'm more than 2 hours drive inland.
Yeah.
Period. End of discussion. Yeah.
We have the Great Lakes, and I will eat them if they were not caught out of the lower part of the Great Lakes. There's a dividing line where Dow Chemical is, and there's an up line where Dow Chemical is not. You don't want to be downstream of the chemical or automotive factories. That is a general rule. I will eat fresh fish from Michigan, provided they were caught up north.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, I love salmon, halibut, tilapia. Yeah. Like, we get so spoiled here. As far as fish and seafood and everything else, it is so freaking good and really, really affordable. I flew through Chicago one time and someone was like, hey, we should grab sushi while we're here. And I'm like, I'm not getting sushi at the Chicago airport. Not going to happen.
Airport sushi.
Yeah.
It's above gas station sushi, which we do have.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have it. We have it here.
We have it here. Yeah.
Okay.
And gas station sushi, guess what? It's still gas station sushi here. It's not fresh.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Yeah.
That doesn't get better anywhere you go.
No.
We've wandered off the tech topic. How do we bring it back in? I shared a link with you for the Windows phone people.
Did you? Let me hold on.
Have a laugh at that. So I'm a big fan of Image, the self-hosted image tool that I've used. I was using Synology Photos as self-hosted, which Synology Photos is quirky and not wonderful. Image has been amazing. That project has been awesome. I'm a big fan of it. But apparently someone's a fan of it, and they still have a Windows phone because someone actually decided to...
This
right here.
Okay.
It's called Lumich. It's the other one. Go back.
Oh.
You had the right. Yeah, that one.
Okay.
Lumich. Someone wrote this for...
Oh, gosh.
The Windows phone. So you can back up your Windows phone photos to Image. I love this. This is fun. Someone still has a Windows phone, and they're happy with it, and they're... now backing their photos up to Image, and they're happy with that, and I'm happy for them because there was such a fan base for the Windows phone. Like, the people that liked it were passionate about it.
Yes.
Matter of fact, I love, and for those of you that want to look up some internet lore, Microsoft held a funeral for the iPhone because the team was absolutely enthusiastic that it was the iPhone killer.
Positive.
They were positive. They had built the best phone ever. And there's a fake funeral that the developers had for the iPhone, which is, just look that up. It's so cringe and so
wonderful. It's so bad. It is peak Steve Ballmer era Microsoft.
It is. We've defeated iPhone. We're going to carry a casket of that looks like a an iPhone.
Yeah.
Because we beat them. I hope Steve Ballmer like watches that video once in a while.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got distracted by some of the feature list. Local versus internet servers switching based on current Wi-Fi SSID. Supports multiple SSID names at once. Useful for larger homes.
Why does your larger home have multiple? You know you can have one.
Because there was an era, specifically 2010, you know, and prior to that, where unified, again, pun intended, networks were not really a thing that were available to consumers. And so if you had a large, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 6,000 square foot house, you didn't have a single Wi-Fi network. You bought multiple access points or multiple routers, and you either daisy chained them together or you know, rudimentary mesh or whatever else, but you had multiple points in your house. There was no handoff. It was simply this one has one SSID and this one has another. If you're upstairs, use Wi-Fi 2. If you're downstairs, use Wi-Fi 1. If you're in the pool house, use Wi-Fi 3. If you're outside, you might get 3, but 4 is going to be better. I love that that is written in there.
Yeah.
As a feature. Because
they know they're a true Windows Phone user.
Yeah.
OG. Yeah. The for those of you that aren't familiar, though, the self-hosted monthly newsletter, it's great. There's a lot of new and interesting things in there. There is a challenge I'm working on. Not that this is bad news, but I think it's something that people should be concerned with. For those of you that followed, and I did a short on it, the Hunter.io controversy, which was... So someone vibe-coded an app called Hunter.io. It glued together all your different media apps, Radar, Sonar, Plex, etc. Mm-hmm. It would help find missing media files. But it also, if you asked it with just a simple command, would give you the passwords and credentials for all of those media services you tied to it. So it was horribly written, and the person was quite insistent that they had all kinds of experience with cybersecurity. So someone who actually had experience with cybersecurity did a pretty basic level of poking. And that basic level of poking, when they said, hey, I found a few flaws you should probably fix, they got immediately banned from the Reddit/r/Huntar, which apparently this was so popular it was even in TrueNAS, which then led to them posting in Reddit self-hosted, which then led to more people trying to post in Huntar and then getting banned from the Huntar subreddit, which eventually led to the person running Huntar nuking the project off of GitHub. They deleted their Reddit account. They deleted their GitHub account. And I talked to the folks over at TrueNAS, and they yanked it from their – I just let them know. I said, I don't know if you're keeping up with the drama lately, but they're like, yeah.
Maybe this one's one to pull. Yeah.
This one's one to pull. And it had – like 3,000 stars on GitHub. It was not like it started yesterday, which is also bringing back to the challenge of what were some of the telltale signs, and how can you, as someone looking for a project that you may want to self-host, know a good one versus a bad one? Now, hopefully, and I know this is not true, but hopefully none of you are publicly exposing this where the real problem could be.
Yeah.
People are foreshadowing here. Uh-huh. So I'm sure a lot of people have a whole lot of more issues now because I just don't want to put a VPN in this. I want to be able to access this from anywhere. Well, it turns out anyone can access from anywhere if you put it online. So I've been trying to come up with like some guidelines of how to spot bad projects and bad programming because it looked really nice. And that's the challenge of vibe coding. Is it does look good. It can get you pretty far.
Yeah.
You just don't know whether or not it's done poorly or not.
Yeah.
It's kind of just one of those challenges.
And that kind of brings us back to something we've been talking about for vibe coding for a long time is a lot of the big names out there, your Amazons, your Microsofts, your OpenAIs, NVIDIAs, etc. They're trying to tout AI as will replace programmers, but they leave out the fact that you still need programmers to vet the code that is generated by it to ensure that it is compliant with, you know, security standards and it actually does what's needed. Also, you need people to document said code because the code doesn't document itself. You need people to be able to fix it when there's a problem. So
I would call out the documentation part. One of the telltale signs is actually well-documented code sometimes with really structured comments. Mm-hmm. Because I know some really good coders. It's like they'll tell you a section of code in the most terse way. You can barely figure out what they're talking. You have to read the code like, I don't know, they said, this loop does the thing I want. You know, that's all you get. But the vibe coder has like a paragraph in there that the AI wrote for them.
Yeah.
But... It is really tricky to make sure it's in someone's hands. It's not building spaghetti code in building a serviceable code base. Because at the end of it all, LLMs are like any other tool. Tools shorten the distance between what you want done and getting it done. It makes work more efficient.
Yeah.
It's an amplifier. If you're an idiot, it amplifies idiocy. So that's part of the problem we're seeing. Because I know some of the egregious problems in the enterprise space that I live in. Most recently, Avanti was in the news. And my favorite way is Avanti uses their own product. And it, apparently hackers got into Avanti in 2020. They found out now in 2026 that they've been there for all these years exploiting stuff. But it's like there's a bunch of egregiously dumb stuff written in there. And it's been around for years, long before vibe coding. Unfortunately, over the next 6 years, because all the vibe coding crap right now, vibe coding is the asbestos we're stuffing the walls with now that we're going to find in a few years.
Oh, what a good analogy.
It's going to take a few years for us to shuffle out all these things that we're using. It's just like, it's exploding. It is. I mean, maybe we'll find it before. Maybe it won't be as latent a problem as asbestos was. Because technology moves faster, but it's rough. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a situation right now. We actually were laughing because there's been so many CVSS score of perfect 10. Cisco just dropped one today. I mean, I think it's their second one this year. We were trying to debate about that because there's a whole other controversy of the Mitre Corp that runs the CVSs. Got some data quality issues, it sounds like, and funding issues that are driving all the problems. The inside information, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this because with the cybersecurity people, it'll be out soon enough. The 10 that dropped, it's actually been around for a few years. The one in SD-WAN, it's been around and been being exploited for a few years. It just got discovered now.
It was published 16 hours ago, but I guess discovered in 22 or something like that. Like,
So
they also had one in December. December 17th, they had a 10.0.
Not 10.0.
Yeah.
And Microsoft had some 10.0s that they got backed off to 9.9s. And there are currently, please, if you've seen an update for Firefox, I know a lot of you are Firefox users, please update your browser immediately. There are 3 10.0s. Jazzy J is the only thing we've been trying to figure out who this person is. They came in and submitted some bugs to Firefox, and they dropped some 10s. They dropped some sandbox escapes. And Firefox is addressing them, but you can't get any information because apparently these are 10. They're high severity.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's a patch. I think this person did it under assumed name. It's always hard to tell with hackers. They always have weird names.
Yeah.
But it's funny because I found reference their name only on these Firefox bugs. They don't seem to have references anywhere else. It's like it's a weird name like Jazzy J. And like someone just typed that in real quick and like, here, that's my name I'm going to use to submit these bugs. Here's a sandbox escape. And so actually there's a I always thought we would learn who the person was. There's an anonymous hero that contacted a very, very large, one of the highest deployed remote connection tools using the enterprise space called Screen Connect. It's absolutely everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it led to what was called the slash and grab. Slash and grab is because you could put a slash at the end of Screen Connect and then a series of whatever characters you wanted, and it would re-kick off the installer. That bug that was found in 2023 dated back to the original release in 2012. Anyone could do this. And it was arbitrary to re-kick off the setup script. Oh, yeah, the slash and grab was amazing. The write-up is just like – it was crazy because the moment you gave the indicator of compromise to someone to write a rule for it, you knew how to do it. You're like, it can't be that easy.
Yeah.
All of us, as we learned about it, because I was working with a few other people, including folks over at Huntress, to get the word out and actually call people who had Screen Connect set up. But the inside information is of how this vulnerability was found. an anonymous user just contacted ConnectWise, says, I don't want to be known. I'm just going to show you this real quick.
Yeah.
And left. Just bombed them of the email and left. Like, here you go. Just let you guys should really fix this.
By the way.
By the way. Dipped. And everyone's like, no way this is real. And it was like, oh boy, this is real. So, it's just kind of fun when you got people like that.
By the way, for those who want to know what the exploit was and why it's so funny, I remember reading this article on Huntress a while back. Go to setupwizard.aspx. This is where you would set up a Screen Connect for the first time. If Screen Connect was already set up, there would be nothing to see or do here. Add a / to the end of the address.
Yep.
You are now connected.
Yep. And when you rerun the setup, it doesn't delete the database with all the computers in it. So you're thinking, oh, what? I could just reset up Screen Connect. Yes, but no. What you do when you reset up Screen Connect is you only reinitialize the users, but all the systems connected stay connected. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to know what the old admin was. Matter of fact, you're about to wipe it out when you run the setup, and you just would create, I'm going to create myself as an admin.
Right.
And go, look, everything's still here. All the settings, all the computers are connected. Yep. I can now remote into all the computers.
Yep.
Oh, man. It is such a mess.
Yep. Insert / hack completed.
Hack completed. Yeah. It was, I remember when I found out about it because, if you're familiar with how some of the cybersecurity stuff is released, they have TLP red, TLP amber it's a traffic light protocol. And kind of gives you, this was all under TLP red with cybersecurity people are like, and even then they were like, we can't talk about how this has happened. We just know you have to patch. But what is the indicators? We knew, he goes, we can't even tell you what the indicator is because you'll know how to exploit it.
Yeah.
Like it was like, you have to patch this. That was like what came down from on high was everyone has to patch this.
Yeah. Well, what's the CVSS? I don't know. Is there an 11?
Yeah, basically, it's like this.
Yeah. Does it go that 11, high? Maybe we should think of new numbers. 11.
Don't worry, Dell's not going to be left out. Dell had a hard-coded credentials in Apache Tomcat, which runs their Dell Open Server Manage tool. So
yeah, I did remember hearing about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that one's like last week's news.
Yeah.
Apparently that was under active exploit, and someone's like, did they really hard code credentials? Yeah. How long has it been like that? Long before vibe coding.
A while. A while.
But whoever the moron was that did it, he's probably vibe coding something as we speak.
Right.
We'll find out about that in a few more years.
Right.
Shove that asbestos in the wall.
He decided to retire from Dell, and now he's making this really cool media plugin tool that you can self-host.
Yeah, just a media plugin tool. Connects all your media stuff together.
Since I'm sure a couple people are wondering, beer number two is one that I have not seen before, but it is a local, one of my favorite breweries locally to me, Block 15 out of Corvallis, Oregon. Block 15 makes what I consider to be the quintessential Northwest IPA in what's called Sticky Hands, as far as a dank IPA goes. Once you've had it, you know what that flavor profile is, and everyone's on the same page. It's just like one of those defining beers. This one, I love everything that I saw about this, and this is the first time that I'm having it. Block 15, the incredible triple IPA. First off, the can art is a Glencairn with hops in it. It's great. I love that can art. 10.6%. Beyond belief, our triple IPA pushes boundaries with the monumental hop characteristics of fresh tropical fruit and sticky resin soaring above a pristine malt foundation for incredible balance. It's just so good, number one. Number two is, when I start going like triple IPA, I think my quintessential Northwest triple would be Ninkasi Megalodon. It's one that you can get if you look for. You might need to go to a bottle shop, but they have enough distribution. It's one of the largest breweries in Oregon. You can usually find it somewhere. This one is actually lighter bodied than Megalodon is, but a little bit more intense flavor. It's weird. Where it has like all the hallmarks of that like super thick, cut it with a knife, dank, intense IPA with a little bit lighter body. Oh, and an extra 0.6% on it. I like it. I like this one a lot.
I think I need to run and grab a another brew. Well, I should be more thoughtful and have it down here already. I did not do that. One of these times, I've only done these live streams for you for several months, but I will soon figure it out.
Yeah, you know, you come down with two is usually what I do.
Come down with two.
Yeah.
I usually switch to whiskey after one beer. That's usually my, but I'm going to go get my whiskey. So same.
Well, there you go.
Same thing. I could have brought it, but I did not. So I'll be right back.
All
right.
Sounds good.
All right.
One of these turns off Tom's camera. I don't know which one it is. No, that's not that. Oh, wait, there it is. Zoom call. All right. Cool. Tom's gone. I don't have set up the solo view yet, unless I want to do... Turn that back on for when he gets back. There we go. Now I can talk. I fixed it. We are a professional show around here, let me tell you. I really wish I had a producer who would take care of all these things beforehand, but no, it's just me. Cool. Does Tom have a producer? No, he doesn't. He probably should at this point, though. Like, I can text and I can get a beer, right? SolarWinds. SolarWinds 123. Jeff is vibe streaming right now. This whole stream is always a vibe stream. I don't know what else to tell you. I will say, someone made a suggestion not long ago, and maybe this will spark a larger conversation once Tom gets back, someone suggested, as I was doing some AI reviews with LLMs and things like that, you know, reviewing the Dell GB10 or my V100 system or anything like that, is, hey, why don't you download a specific programming-focused LLM and you vibe code something and you see what's possible. And I said, I think I'm going to have to decline. And it's for the exact same reasons that I harp on vibe coding. It's because I'm not a coder. I don't know what I'm doing. And while I could probably make something function through vibe coding, I have no way of knowing if it's good or if it's secure. I can't read code well enough to tell you. I can't vet projects like that. So if I were to promote, hey, look at what I can do with an LLM. I can vibe code this thing on a Raspberry Pi to do X thing. You should totally host this yourself. That's bad advice because I don't even know if it's secure. Nor do I want to present myself as an expert vibe coder, because I'm certainly not. I'm not even a regular
coder.
Everyone's
an expert vibe coder. Come on.
I'm not even a regular coder. With, I feel enough personal responsibility to not show you that. If that makes sense.
Did you mute yourself, Jeff?
No. Should be okay. On. Can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just saying I've seen people in the comments.
Oh, no. I already fixed that. I went to the solo screen, and the solo screen didn't have my audio input. So I grabbed it, okay. Fixed it. We're all good. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Yep.
Making sure. I just catch up with the comments when I sat down.
Novella Hub says, I need to consult Ray Dal.
I got to congratulate him on making self-hosted, because I've never made that newsletter.
I've never made the self-hosted newsletter.
And he's at the top of it.
That's pretty good, right?
I think for being infamous, not famous.
Love you, Brett. Love you, man. Love you, man. I think we could talk about it. We could talk about it lightheartedly, because this kind of goes hand in hand with what I was just talking about. Like, I'm not a coder. I don't know what I'm doing. So I know you've done a little bit more reading on this than I have.
very little more, because so the long and short of it here, as I understand it from the self-hosted newsletter, I've not watched a video directly, and I'm also biased. I like Ray Dalio. He's a friend.
Yeah,
he's
a nice guy. Brett's a really good guy. Yeah,
and I don't think anyone thinks he was malicious with what he did.
Right.
But it sounded like his vibe coding, and this is a challenge. It copied a popular project. So then he just re-vibe coded what someone else did without giving attribution. But I don't think he maliciously did it. I think he not maliciously do it. I have not gotten deep into the details, but essentially this caused quite the kerfuffle. At first I thought the kerfuffle, and I dismissed it and didn't watch the video. I'm like, oh, people are mad at him for vibe coding and unlisted the video. If he unlisted it, I don't care about watching it that much. But I did see it, and I just skipped over that post and read it self-hosted. But then when I seen it in a self-hosted newsletter, I'm like, oh, he copied someone else's project. Oh, that's different.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've I covered DocHand, for example. And now all indications for me looking at DocHand, I did my some level of due diligence. It seems popular. I've seen some engagement. They actually did not say they were vibe coding it. They seem to have proper pull requests. They seem to have really strong like processes in place, because they prune their Docker image well. I didn't like really deeply examine it, but they seem to do it in a good way. Once again, some of it goes beyond the scope of what I'm really good at, which I'm slowly getting better at validating these things. But I got a few messages from people that claims DocHand copied their project, and I don't know if that's true or not. I because I don't know. They've both been around for a minute, not long. They've both been around kind of a short minute, and so I don't know who copied who. I got some messages from people, and I said, did you look at the code? Is it the same? They said, no, it's not, but they copied our design for a Docker manager. And I'm like, I don't know. Because I don't know the people at DocHand. I just chose it because I set it up. I said, I like this. I'd like to share this too. But the people in the comment sections are like, yeah, this, complained about the project. So I, it gets hard for us because, I mean, a few people had messaged me that I'm a paid shill. I'm like, for what?
Oh, I get that every week. That's just normal.
Yeah, DocHand's free. Matter of fact, I thought it was interesting what DocHand did. They did a not a normal GPL license. They did a business license, but I forget the license name they used. It's in the video. I commented on it. I said, yeah, this is the type of license you're using. But they said, initially, they're using this license. Then they're flipping it after they've been around for 2 years to the full Apache license.
Yeah.
And they have that under roadmap. Like, this is what the license is today. And in 2 years from now, this is what the license will be. Like, that's how we're doing it.
Yeah.
And they're doing it to try to let them build up without someone just cloning their project. So I kind of get it, because open source is a little bit of a mess. And I definitely in my younger years was all purist about GPL, and now I'm like, everything's a mess and I don't know what the answer is. I want everything to be open source, but I don't know that I hate these licenses for things, because there's problems. Yes.
Mm-hmm. As an open source developer, let me give you some insight into my thought process for my current thing. I love open source. I absolutely love open source. You should make things your own. You should be able to contribute. You should be able to modify. You should be able to, you know, whatever else. We are going to be releasing the firmware for OpenViro open source as soon as we start shipping the boards. Well, why haven't you released the open source yet? The firmware is probably done. Yeah, the firmware is done. We don't want someone to clone us and undercut us before we release hardware, because at the same time, we're also a hardware company. Number two, when we release this, there will be a contributor license agreement. So if you contribute code back, we will own that code. Why are we doing that? That's against the open source philosophy. Well, the reason we're doing that is we're having two branches of this product. One is going to be consumer focused. The other is going to be enterprise focused. And if there's an enterprise branch that needs code that has been publicly submitted, I still need to own that code. That's how the world works. And so it's not going to be very popular when it gets released and it's licensed in a specific way. It's still going to be open source. You could still vet it. You could still, you know, whatever else. We may or may not allow forking. I don't know if we're doing that yet. But open source simply means you can open the source. It doesn't mean you have rights to do whatever you want with it. And it's a fine line to balance when you're in business, trying to make money off an idea that you had and off a product that you're trying to sell. So, yeah.
It's complicated.
It's very complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. No easy answers on that. Heavy topic.
Yeah. I would love to simply give everything that I've ever made away for free, but also still earn money from it. Those things are mutually exclusive.
The number of people, so I still release my videos under Creative Commons. People misunderstand my Creative Commons license. There is less of it now because YouTube made things harder for the people to do it.
Yeah.
But what people do is just simply re-upload my videos and say, well, they're Creative Commons, so I have the right to do it. I'm like, no, you do not have the right to monetize my... Oh, they would rip the entirety of my video.
Yeah.
If I had an ad in the video, they would cut that out. The only part of the video would get cut. Like, the entirety of the video, except for the ad roll.
We've all had this
Sometimes they
happen.
Wouldn't even
yeah.
cut that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes they wouldn't cut that, which I actually thought was funny because when I argued with the guy, he got mad at me, and he says, I left your ad in. Because it was an ad for me, like the ad, yeah. like if you like to hire us, he left that part in. And I thought it was funny that he thought that made it justified. He goes, I'm putting your video in more places.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're putting it in the same place. You're on YouTube.
Yeah.
I said, if you want to post it to some other platform, honestly, I probably won't waste my time chasing you.
Right.
That's why I told him. I said, I'll at least be honest and give you something better to go yep. do. I said, but if you're going to post it to the same platform it's on, you're not doing me any favors.
Yeah, what is the Chinese service Baidu or something like that? Yeah, there's a Chinese video host that's very popular. My videos have popped up there. Cool. I get exposure yeah. there now. That's not a market that I monetize. That's not a market that I really, you know, that yeah. I'm pushing content to. Yeah, cool, whatever. It doesn't affect me. That's piracy that has zero impact on me. If you're re-uploading to YouTube, that's a view that is not mine. End yeah. of the day. Look, I make fractions of a penny for a view, but if you got 7,000 views on a video that you re-uploaded of mine, that's 7,000 views my video did not receive. That's still a monetary damage to me. Yeah. I have seen people redirect affiliate links to their own, and so I'll post a product review. They will re-upload my video, and then insert their own affiliate link. So not only am I not getting the view count, I'm also not getting the click-throughs, which yep. I also rely on for you know, whatever else.
And a lot of times in the YouTube land, because ad dollars are so small, or ad revenue from YouTube's yeah. ad system, the affiliate links are much more
yeah.
favorable to us.
Yeah. Which is really funny when I give a bad review for a product, I still end up selling 7 of them, and I still end up making more on affiliate links than I do on the actual video that got published.
Yeah.
That is so much fun.
You know, speaking of YouTube, let's pivot a little bit.
Sure.
Here. I remembered something that I think is uplifting, I think is interesting, and I'm looking forward to it.
Mm.
So Kane Pixels, if you don't know the name, Kane Pixels has produced some pretty interesting YouTube content that are, I don't know that I want to call them movies, but they're like, I guess kind of is a movie because this one is 46 minutes. This part 3 is 46 minutes long. It's a series called The Oldest View by Kane Pixels.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them, the first ones I watched. I've seen some of the others. He has an absolute brilliant talent for creating a liminal space and giving you this eerie feeling through a narrative. Oh, yeah. See, people know the back rooms.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the back rooms guy.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it's fascinating. But he got a deal. Young guy. I want to say he was like 20 when
he
signed 20. The deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. A24 is producing one of his movies, and he just dropped the trailer for it. Like, A24 is a pretty innovative studio. They've made some really cool stuff over the years. It's a little bit different than a lot of the Hollywood stuff. It's better storytelling, less flashy graphics,
yeah.
which is definitely – well, Kane Pixels is an exception to that because as I've learned – because I was like, this filming's amazing, but I don't understand where he filmed it. And I learned he just produced a lot of it. Like, he used 3D art to create it, and it looks extremely, like, I think he filmed it at a abandoned mall, and it's not filmed at an abandoned mall, but you are convinced it's filmed at an abandoned mall.
Right.
So it's one of those, it's the best special effects are when you didn't notice the special effects.
Yeah.
Yeah, A24 and Blumhouse, both of them have produced some really neat stuff. But the I'm excited. They just released the first trailer for what's going to be his first movie, so I'm pretty excited about that. That's nice. I like when movies are something very different. You know, of the movies I watched last year, some of them are produced by these smaller studios doing something interesting, creating compelling story, not superhero flashy graphics. Yeah. So, I mean, superhero flashy graphics, sure, I watch it, sure, I'm entertained, cool, everything exploded, everything was big, and my speakers went boom. But, you know, occasionally, tell me a story.
Yeah.
Make me enjoy it. Yes. And I always feel that the other one's there. Although, did you, I don't know if you watched a lot of movies, but did you watch Weapons?
No, I did not.
So, my favorite Reddit review of Weapons.
I have three children under 13. I don't watch movies anymore, Tom.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think that was outside of there. Weapons is about a bunch of kids that kind of get taken. So it's a very interesting, slightly supernatural story.
Yeah.
And there's in the trailers, it's not really a spoiler, where all the kids run free and destroy things. But it's like Weapons is really about just telling you how destructive kids between 10 and 12 can be.
Oh, yeah.
Because they absolutely just terrorize things for a little while. And it's crazy.
That second streak of independence that kids get, you know, middle to high school age, where they're like, I'm kind of my own person now. I can go. By the way, this has nothing to do with current parenting that I may be doing in my household, but that little streak of independence that you might reach once you become a teenager. It hits a little different, doesn't it?
Yep. Oh, I see someone in there. The worst thing about reading House of Leaves in public is no one understands why you're holding the book upside down and slowly spinning it. But I will understand why you're doing it. So that book is upstairs. You know, that's actually what I do more so than I'm trying to get into video games, but which also means I'm taking a hiatus from books. I read more books than I do play games. That's my little guilty pleasure I found later in life was reading as many. I read a decent amount of books when I was younger, but they're always just technical manuals.
Right. Yeah.
Now I'm actually reading like stories.
Yeah.
I was just against fiction for no particular reason other than defiant against it. I'm not reading a fiction book. If I'm reading a book, it'll be a technical manual. I'm gonna learn how to code something.
What's really funny is I would read technical manuals or product manuals or anything like that for the longest time. But I also drove about an hour to work and an hour from work every single day. On the way to work, I would listen to audiobooks. And on the way home, I would usually listen to sports radio, sports talk. And so I would have like three wildly different mediums of consuming information in a single day, at like an hour each. And I really liked it. Like, oh, why don't you just like listen to more audiobooks? It's like I got enough of that book on the way to work. I don't need 2 hours of that a day. I want just enough of the story to progress. I want just enough character development or whatever else, or just enough of that scene to fin. And then when I wake up in the morning, I want to look forward to hearing what's next. I don't want to double step that. Also, I like the Blazers. I like the Ducks. I like you know things that are happening in sports. I want to know about that. And then, you know, why don't you watch ESPN at lunch? Well, I'm reading my book then. Like that.
I made a new local friend. Get this weird DM on Reddit, and you're just going to lead to something's going to make you laugh.
Yeah.
But turns out works in tech and lives 2 miles from me. Mm-hmm. But anyways, became friends, started BSing. And he bought a house, and he's been talking about home assistant. So you're sharing home assistant stuff.
Yeah.
And he's got a fun goal because he's got some ability to code and write things, but I laughed at what his goal is. It's all because he's hoping to have it all working soon. He wants it before next season of the Lions. He's got this whole Lions themed basement that he built, so obviously
I like him already.
Yeah, yeah. And he wants an entire home assistant thing, so when they score, it pulls, it gets information and blinks the lights and stuff like that. And he was just going over this whole thing. I'm like, that is actually kind of cool that you had to do. Like, it has this whole Lions thing. He goes, the sad part is it's only going to happen a couple times a year. I'm like, I'm going to shit up with Jeff.
That's funny.
He's like, all this work, it'll be worth it, even though the Lions going to happen a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Home assistant to pull the Lion score that then blinks lights and changes
Blinks lights on a score change. Yeah. with my life as busy as it is, I don't do a lot of subscriptions or I don't want notifications on scores because sometimes I'm not watching live. And so I really enjoy watching sports, but at the same time, it's like, I am so busy. Sometimes I get to watch a recap at like 10 o'clock that night. I don't want my phone dinging with every first down and every score and every lead change and things like that, because that's part of the enjoyment is what happened.
Yes.
And so I don't know, like, that sounds really fun and really cool and something that I would love to turn on if I could time it properly with like a party or something like that to like sync with a TV broadcast to when the Lions score, all of a sudden the lights go blue or whatever else. Yeah.
And it wouldn't be hard to probably set up Frigate to watch the show with you,
right,
to grab the images and watch when the Lions score and activate something based
when
on
number
that.
Goes up, you know, on because the score bug at the bottom is usually pretty accurate to real time things. And so, you know, when the Lions cross the end zone, that score bug's going to flip from a 7 to a 13, and you go, oh, I can update my algorithm now, and I can, you know, give a touchdown celebration or a field goal celebration, you know, with the lighting and sounds and things like that. I think that's something that could totally be done, especially with some, you know, machine vision, you know.
The machine vision stuff is something I might work on a little more next. Like, I have, through a series of hooks, if a human or a vehicle is detected in the front of my house or the back of my house in different areas, I have different types of alerts and it turns different lights on based on that. But someone did something clever at an event, and I didn't understand why they were doing this until they finally got to it. Can you think of a good reason you would want to connect your vision system that recognizes objects in your camera to your calendar? Why would you want that integration? The answer is really obvious as soon as the guy said it. It doesn't make any... So what he ended up doing
Your calendar will... Like, if you're using, like, Google Calendar or something like that, you could have it highlight or identify certain colors on certain days for certain events and have it trigger lights or sounds or, you know, reactions.
But he was having it pushed to the calendar. Yeah, yeah. I was stumped. I was stumped when the guy started explaining this until he showed me the end result.
LLM vision push to calendar? Okay, now I'm confused and really intrigued.
I was confused and intrigued because this is so clever and it's genius. The LLM had a special calendar set up in his Google Calendar that was just dedicated to what it recognized. So at 2:33 p.m., a man in a brown shirt dreams a box. The UPS guy drops a box and sets on the porch. At 2:35 p.m., someone else sets a pizza on there. It logged all the things that happened in a calendar and then linked to the video. I'm like, this man's a genius. I was like, and it shows up on his phone in real time. So he actually knew without looking at the video to roll back into video.
That is really clever to make calendar events.
Yeah.
That is really clever because usually that's a SQL database on the back end that you've got to query for certain events. You just cataloged it and categorized it in real time. Holy shit.
I said that. I was like, I have been thinking wrong.
Dude.
This was so obvious. Like, this is so easy. And he's like, it ain't hard at all. Because he goes, the nice thing is I don't need a VPN for home or anything. My Google Calendar, my phone is real-time updated for what's going
just
on at
updated.
Home.
Updated. Hey, there's a brown event. Oh, cool. UPS stopped by at 2:33.
Yeah. Someone set a package in. Oh, cool. My package is here. And I know when it arrived. Someone took the package
off
the
porch. I'm angry at how clever that is.
I was too. When he said when he started out the talk, because it's at an event, and he was like, I used the push. I'm like, why are you timing it? You're timing your lights to your calendar? I guess that could work, but I just use timers in Home Assistant to do that. It was like, what? It was just great. Ellen and Vision timeline, like photos and stuff. He had some cool extra clever things he had done, but I was just like, yeah, that alone, that's your basis that you can really build something neat on.
Yeah. I bought some doorbell cameras like 3 years ago. I still haven't installed them, and it's been on my mind lately with all the Ring things. Like, you know what? I'm going to make a video on like installing my own cameras with blackjack and hookers and make it work, like kind of thing.
What kind of cameras are they?
They are... Hold on. I can tell you exactly what I bought.
I have the... I don't have them on my house because I don't have a doorbell on my house.
Yeah.
We don't have
doorbells either. We have a doorbell transformer, but it's very much disconnected. But I bought a new doorbell transformer that I was going to put in the attic and then power both the cameras via 24 volt off of that. However, I also don't love that they're Wi-Fi, and so now I'm considering getting a PoE camera so I can run hard lines so it can't be, you know, attacked with an RF device. Because that's also a thing.
Because I do like the unified doorbells, and now the unified doorbells have PoE and jacks, and they're really nice. I love the unified camera system. I've been really happy with it.
Yeah. My biggest gripe about their Amcrest. Is what I bought. My biggest gripe with the Unify system is they're more expensive than everyone else. I understand that they're integrated. I understand that it's a nice unified environment. But spending $250 for a camera when it should cost $70.
Their cameras have come down a lot.
Okay.
So they're in the 130, 150 category.
Okay, that's
so
better. That's better.
Much better.
Yeah.
But what makes them interesting is the fact that the NVR itself is stupid. The NVR is a cheap product because none of the brains are in it. They have to have all the brains in the camera because there's no, when you look at the NVR, you look at the processor, you're like, this thing is spec'd poorly.
Yeah.
And you're like, all it's doing is collecting data, and all the data has to come from the camera.
It's like four core ARM V7 is what's on the NVR or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like it is 2017 era cell phone tech is what's in the NVR.
Yeah. But what the cool thing is they now also offer sub $100 cameras, which are some of their Wi-Fi ones, which are good for around the house and things like that.
Yeah.
So they've really come down because you're right. Before it was always like, I can buy these Amcrest with some of these features for $79.
And they're like, yeah, we've got the new G4 camera. It's $299. I'm like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, I'm not buying seven of those around. I don't have $2,100 for cameras around my house. I'm sorry.
One of the nice things they've done for integration was they fully integrated webhooks into it. So they have an API as well, but if you don't even want to query API, you can just do webhook to things, which is also quite handy.
Yeah.
So,
I knew you could webhook them. You can get like MJPEG streams going anywhere. You could do a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Which is cool as far as like, hey, you have these cameras, they are yours. You can use them for what you want. And I always appreciated that, but I always scoffed at the $300 price tag of a lot of their bullet cams.
Yep. Well, I actually think it's kind of funny. A lot of people are always like, you got to lock down the camera network. You got to make sure the cameras can't get online. And then people are like, well, then they won't get firmware updates. I'm like, actually, the interesting way the Unify defined them, you don't have to have them online at all.
Yep.
They get their updates directly from the NVR. They don't even ping online.
Yep.
They don't reach out. They only talk to the NVR. So only the NVR needs internet. And it doesn't need internet. It's optional, but I recommend updating firmware.
Yeah. We have some Wyze cameras, but they are on an isolated network. They cannot reach online, and we don't even use the Wyze software or the web interface for them.
I
downloaded the what is the streaming protocol? RTSP.
RTSP.
Yeah. That for the Wyze V3 and the Wyze V4. You can download a firmware that enables RTSP on those cameras. And so we have it on an independent system on its own network. There's still Wi-Fi. I don't love that. I want my cameras hardlined, but I also haven't felt the need to invest $3,000 into everything that I need to make a full camera network work. Like,
yeah.
When I build my studio, yes, probably. Maybe.
Yeah.
But Look, the drywall's down. You can run as many wires as you want.
Yeah. The camera system I have, I went a little overboard with my unified camera system. I now have one of the AI industrial PTZs in my backyard.
Nice.
That is used to watch squirrels. And my wife thought I was joking, and she's watching me with, as it has a, I think it's a 32x optical zoom, and she's like, "You are really watching squirrels." I'm like, "Yes, I am," and I'm happy about this.
What's really funny is we live in a split level house, and so our entrance is at street level, but then we have a staircase that just goes like this, and so my office is a 5 foot sunken daylight basement. I have a 3 foot window over here on the sidewall, but other than that, I'm surrounded by concrete down here. And it's great. It's great for noise isolation. I hardly ever hear anything from the street. It stays nice and cool all year long. But that also means my living room, which is above me, is 5 foot above grade at the floor level, which means the living room window is like 14 feet off the ground. Like it's up there. What's really cool is we have a couple of maple trees in our front yard, and the squirrels love to run on the branches of the maple tree, which run right in front of our giant living room window. And so I love sitting on the couch watching TV and then being able to turn around and there's like two or three squirrels just going back and forth and chasing each other. That is so much fun.
Yeah, they're just great to watch.
Yeah,
I like sit. I love in the summer. I sit outside and watch them do stuff.
Zeus chimes in with a $2 donation. Thank you very much, Mr. Home Lab Hazards. Yeah, I would never spend $2,100 on cam... Wait. I haven't been to your house, but I know people who have, so I'm aware.
Yeah.
We'll put it that
way. I have a lot of cameras.
Skull says, I watched the city deer on mine. The deer have made it to my house. I've got multiple pictures of them walking around our cars in the driveway and things like that. That's always fun.
I'm too much in the burbs to have deer. They are within a few miles of here, but it's like they're 2 miles away.
We're on the very edge of the burbs, and so we do get deer here occasionally. Yeah. It's really funny, actually. I took my daughters to the beach years ago, and we ended up driving down this isolated road going down to beach access, and there was a family of deer that walked across the road, and my oldest was in the front seat and my middle kid was in the back, and so my oldest got to see the deer cross the road and was like, oh, that's really cool. Well, years later, like 2-3 years later, we're driving up the back hills behind my house to come in the back way, and my youngest says from the back seat, hey, do you remember when we were at the beach and you saw those deer? And I went, yeah, I remember that. And she goes, I really wish I could have seen them. And I went, yeah, that would have been cool, but you know, there's deer around here too. We turn the next corner and there's a family of deer crossing the road right in front of us.
Nice.
The timing could not have been more perfect. It's like, oh, you wanted to see deer. Well, there you go.
Yeah. Driving. Driving and deer are a whole different. It's a real challenge here in Michigan. I imagine it is everywhere.
Yeah, so. I've hit one. I don't know anyone who hasn't hit one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. I hit one with my wife's car. That was really funny. This is
better than your car.
Yeah, better. Yeah, exactly. Gosh, this would have been 2007 ish. I used to work the mid graveyard shift, so I would start at 2 a.m. and then get off at noon. Noon being a good day, 4 p.m. being a bad day. Do the math. Anyway, needed to go to work one day, went out to my car and my car wouldn't start. Battery was dead. And so I'm like, well, I'm just going to take my wife's car. And so I get in my wife's car, drive away from home, about 2 miles away from home, and there's a deer on the side of the road. And I'm looking at him, and it's on the same side of the road I am. And it's wanting to cross, and so I'm driving this way, deer is on my side of the road, wanting to cross in front of me. And I went, don't do it. And I get about 50 feet from it, and it takes 3 steps out into the middle of the road. And I'm coming over as much as I'm comfortable. It's a 2-lane, 60-mile-an-hour road. I'm like, I don't like this. Get closer to the deer, and it takes one more step right in front of me. I end up cracking it with my wife's front right headlight. Took the legs out from under it, broke both its shoulders.
Ooh.
Completely messed up my wife's car. It was a 95 Dodge Neon. Buckled the front bumper, the hood, and pushed the fender back into the passenger door, so the passenger door didn't want to open anymore. And broke the windshield. So got all of that. Slammed on the brakes. Looked behind me. Deer got up, ran off, probably died 50 feet later, as deer tend to do. But it's like, god dang it. So called into work, went, hit a deer. I'm going home. Got to get the car fixed. Luckily, it was all just panel damage. It wasn't really that bad. But yeah, the only deer I've ever hit was with my wife's car. Until we're driving down to California years later, in my car, in the car that didn't want to start because it had a dead battery. And my wife's in the passenger seat with me. It's about 6 a.m. We're going through Medford, Southern Oregon, on I-5. Same scenario. There's a deer on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. And I went, don't do it. And I saw him from like 200 yards away. I'm like, don't do it. Deer starts coming. So I just slammed on the brakes. It's 6 a.m. I can slam on the brakes. Even though it's I-5, there's no one behind me. There's no one in front of me. It's a 7 mile straightaway. People are going to see me. So I just slam on the brakes. We come to a stop maybe 50 feet from the deer. It walks into the middle of the road, stops, looks at us, looks back down the road, looks back at us, chills there for like 5 minutes. Just stand in the middle of the road. Like, yeah, see, this is what exactly what happened to me with your car. Only I couldn't stop like that because we were cresting a hill at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't have this option.
Yeah. All the wonderfuls of life. Riding a motorcycle only makes that more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I slow down. I see a deer on the bike because I'm out in the woods a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, I'm slowing way down.
Yeah.
I seen someone mention elk, and I did have a terrifying experience. We're riding a pretty steep hill, and there's a cut into the hill. So we're riding on the side of the hill where it just levels out for a second.
Yeah,
So it's steep down and steep up. So you are on this trail, and you are not deviating from it.
Yeah.
And we're just going, and an elk was wandering up the hill. I'm like, I think I can get ahead of him. I don't know. And it was like instantly on top of us, and it ran next to us on the trail. It was just like riding side by side because it didn't cross us. It ran side by side with me and my friend, and we were just like, I don't know if I should slow down because we're now scared of the elk. If we slow down and stop, will it stop?
Right.
I don't know. It just trotted alongside. Eventually, it just kind of stopped and stared at us, and we just kept driving. It was like,
yeah,
we're like, we could have died.
Yeah. No, elk are not.
Elk are so big.
Yeah.
They're just. You just can't believe something that large just wanders its way through the woods. There's like sticks hanging off its antlers and stuff because it doesn't care.
It doesn't care. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've got a number of elk stories. My motorcycle story, though. So I've ridden motorcycles since I was about 5 years old. Motorcycles, ATVs, snowmobiles, anything. Anything with an engine between my legs.
An engine on it. Jeff's going.
I am at home. Feeling. Right. I remember I was in my late 20s and I had just bought a 250cc dirt bike after I had sold a pair of 660 snowmobiles. Because it's like, okay, well, I need something that I can ride all year long because the snow doesn't last long around here. I've got kids now. I'm not making it up to the mountains as much. Let me go ahead and, you know, I'll buy a dirt bike. That way I can make it up in the summer and I can still ride. Cool.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was like, well, you know, if I'm going to buy a motorcycle and I'm going to buy, you know, do all this stuff, I might as well go ahead and get my endorsement, ride on the road, you know, commute to work, you know, all the things that motorcycle riders do. And so I'm up there with my dirt bike, and I'm up riding with my dad, and I remember coming around a corner, and all the trails in that area were gravel, but they were quarry gravel that was non-compactable. They were round,
really
stone,
loose, wobbly,
the real loose stone, yeah. Exactly. And so I'm coming around a corner at about 70 miles an hour, and you're hanging one side out, and then you kind of ride it, and you're fishtailing for a little while down the trail, and you're just kind of riding on top of this super loose pat gravel. And I remember thinking to myself, when a week earlier I went, I need to go get my endorsement, I need to go buy a street bike, I need to commute to work, I need to do all this stuff. I remember coming around that corner at 70 miles an hour, fishtailing it out, hanging it out, having a grand old time, going, you know, I could probably do 80. And the logical portion of my brain chimed in and went, are you stupid? Like the reckless side went, I could totally do 80 right now. And then the logical side went, no. You probably should not own a motorcycle. You probably shouldn't even own this dirt bike, but you do. And I'm going to let you drive home. But you're not going to buy a street bike. Because I know you. I know you better than you know you. And so I had this whole debate as I'm fishtailing down this road. And at the end of the road, I went, I'm not going to buy a street bike. I'm never going to get my endorsement because I will kill myself.
Yeah.
I have just enough of that adrenaline junkie mentality to hang it out an inch outside of my ability. And if I do that on the road, I'm going to die. And so literally, I still own that dirt bike. It's still in my shed. I still have it. I never went and got my endorsement. I never, you know, I still ride it occasionally. I'll go out on it and blast some trails and whatnot, but I trail blast. That's all I do.
Yep.
That's all I want to do anymore. Because I've also got three kids and I like coming home.
Yeah. I'm to the point where I have grandkids, so I'm back to doing stupid on motorcycles. But I'm keeping my stupid in the dirt. So.
See, that's my dad. I went out and wanted to get my motorcycle endorsement, knowing my dad almost lost his leg in a motorcycle accident a couple years before I was born. And knowing my dad has been in multiple accidents since I was born, including wrapping a BMW rental bike around a tree about 100 yards off the road. he went on for his 50th, I think. My stepmom got him a rental with him and a friend, and they're like, oh yeah, we'll get like BMW, you know, cross trails, and we'll go off and we'll do like all of Eastern Oregon and we'll have a grand old time. And he rounded the road at like 90 miles an hour, and they had just freshly tarred and sealed the road, so it was, ooh, basically the consistency of snot. And yeah, he goes, I hit that corner and I left the road, and it was one of those canyon cut roads. And so he left the road by 100 yards and wrapped that bike around a tree. 30 years after he had almost lost his leg doing the exact same freaking thing. And so, yeah, all of this kind of culminated in, like, I don't need to ride a motorcycle. I will still ride a trail bike. I will still, you know, I'll still go through whoopties. I'll still have fun. But I do not need to daily a bike. I don't need to.
I'm laughing because people first heard me mention I'm a grandfather, and then they're like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I have six grandkids. That's true.
Yeah.
So between me and my wife, we have five kids, and three of the kids have children.
Yeah.
So several of them.
Time catches up with us all, my friend.
Yeah. I like it when people say things like, oh, you started young or you planned young. I'm like, oh, there was no planning involved. Like, I knew the potential outcome of the act.
Yeah.
But it turned out that it wasn't really planned. But yes, I did have kids young.
Yeah. Yeah, we, let me put it this way. My wife on our first date told me she wanted four kids, and I still married her.
Mm.
How's that?
Yeah. Yeah, the first girl I got engaged, she wanted zero. I was fine with that, but I engaged, never married.
Yeah.
We had a lot of other issues.
Yeah.
Probably good we never had kids together.
Right.
Then there was the first one. She wanted kids. We had a few of those. And now I'm on wife 2.0.
Yeah.
And she calls me husband 2.0. So this is a mutual agreement because we are both remarried.
Well, there you go. So. Honestly, that's a totally healthy arrangement. Like,
yeah, yeah. We've accepted that both of us made mistakes in our earlier lives.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I love that both of you can pull up at any time. Look, you obviously have a serious lack in judgment.
We both can just pull that out. Like, yeah, we've both seen each other's exes.
Right, right. It's just, yeah.
There was a younger time when we made poorer decisions than we made today.
Yep. No, but me and my wife, my first wife, this year we'll be married 20 years.
Congratulations. It's awesome.
Thank you. Congrats. Yeah. Yeah. Later on this year. That has been a long time. Yeah. What's really funny is I went to the bottle shop today to buy some Block 15 and some Irish Stout and whatnot. And the girl behind the counter kind of looked at me like she's doing the math in her head. Like, do yeah. I need to ID you? Are you over 27? And eventually she went, nah, you're probably okay. And I went, let me put it this way. This year I've been married 20 years. She goes, oh yeah, you're definitely okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is weird because, I mean, me and my wife were just talking about the fact that we've been together for, the current wife is 17 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know that people just know. I'm over 50. So
yeah.
That's, for those wondering, if they're trying to do that math in their head thing.
Like, yeah.
Tom's over 50. So.
Yeah.
And I also got married, like, when I was 19 or 20 to the first wife. So
yeah.
Yes. That went a number of years. It's just, yeah. Cause it, yeah, it's life is weird like that.
Yep. So yeah, I'm full. Okay.
Yeah. Jeff's not crossed the 50 line. Yet.
Undisclosed.
Yeah, undisclosed.
Yeah, but
Bible rolls up on you like a cop car, man. It just
oh, it does. Yeah. No, like I said, I've
sneaks up on you.
I've got a teenager, I've got a 4-year-old, and I've got everything in between. And man, mm-hmm. that is, you know, you're going, yeah, I've got 6 grandkids. I'm like, yeah, I'm a decade and a half away from that. Maybe, yeah. Maybe less. Like,
maybe. It's a strange thing.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, one of those ages.
one of those in there.
One of those in there. That kind of range.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we successfully did an upbeat show.
Well, we did an upbeat show. We did not talk about craziness too much.
I didn't have to turn the rant alert on one time, although we came close when I ranted at Microsoft, although they kind of deserved it. But yeah, I want more of this.
Yes.
Unfortunately, news marches on and ice still sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. We're in the wrong part of the story arc. It does get better right now, though. It's still on the downward of the arc. I can't wait for the upward of that story arc.
Yeah.
It'll get there.
Yeah.
And there's little snippets. There's finding the right levels of things, and there's the better self-hosted community, and some of the other things we talked about are good. So,
yeah.
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 We still got that.
There's still great things out there. The weird thing is, I don't know what the bigger conversation around this is, but PC as a hobby, there's not a lot of things that are accessible as far as brand new PC right now. That doesn't mean that you have to buy new, though, which kind of reinforces the whole home lab hacker vibe that
I
really like.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like the scrappy, all right, we're going to figure out how to do this more efficiently. We're going to figure out how to do this on a tighter budget. We're going to get creative. We're going to have to hack something together. That, you know, because I follow, and by the way, me and my friend started a motorcycle channel, so I've been watching more motorcycle channels.
Yeah, yeah.
We've been talking about this. But there's a guy, and if you just look up the term, I think he called them micro vacations or something along, micro adventures. But the bigger specific thing the person was talking about is how their life has changed, because as you find some levels of success that you maybe didn't have when you were younger, you don't have something pushing against you. So you're not out of your comfort zone all the time because things become so routine.
Yeah.
And the guy, he talks about finding a lot of success in life that he chased and worked for, but now having it means, man, I need to find a way, like almost to pressure and convince myself. And there is something about pushing against that. Back to kind of the topic at hand here.
Yeah, yeah.
Is we're creating these struggles that now everyone has, and it becomes like everyone is a community of how do we overcome these struggles again? Because when I could just buy drives and massive amounts of storage for cheap, I did.
Right.
So I have a lot of storage now. You know, and you could buy easy, cheap servers. You did. You stuffed them with lots of memory because you could, and the economy was well, and it almost like, oh, it's even harder.
When I was paying $1 a gig, I had no problem dropping $500 on a 512 gig set of DDR4 3200 for a project. Like, that wasn't even a second thought. When I could call Western Digital and say, hey, I need 20 drives, and 3 days later, 20 drives would arrive on my doorstep, it wasn't even a second thought. Now it's different.
Right. And you know, the challenge you had was, all right, this doesn't work with this, so I'll put them in separate virtual machines or something like that. Now you're like, well, I can't run separate virtual machines because I only have this much RAM, so I'm going to have to figure out how much headroom I have. And
yeah,
let's go ahead and engineer a better, more efficient system. I think this is in general. You look at the early computer days, the constraints of Doom are what built Doom. Doom could only work with the vision of the creators because they were able to optimize the hardware that they had. They didn't have gigs of RAM. They didn't have massive amounts of video power. They had to invent it all. And I think that's what's so cool is when you can.
John Carmack did have a 1920 by 1080 28-inch CRT. Let's not pretend they didn't also have really good things, okay?
They didn't. But their goal was so we could play the game.
True.
Because we didn't have it. So, yes, John Carmack certainly did well. But
yes,
the constraints he worked under, by the way, if you haven't read it, there's a book called Masters of Doom, which is about the history of it.
Yep.
But the constraints they worked under is what drove so much innovation in the way they did things. I think that's always very interesting.
Yep. Yeah, it goes back to necessity is the mother of all invention, because if you need something to work, you will figure out a way to make it work. And honestly, I'm kind of experiencing that a little bit myself, because for the last couple of years, I've been running an AMD EPYC 7742 64-core ARM Rome CPU for a home lab server. And I'm like, what do I do with this? I don't even know. Like,
it does
effort. And it had 256 gigs of memory, plus I had an extra box that had an extra 256 gigs of memory. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just throw this with like 16 gigs of RAM. It doesn't even matter. And now I'm like really thinking about my home lab, because I want to practice what I preach. And so I went back to the X79 microcloud, and I'm running 8 individual nodes with 64 gigs of RAM as a max, because I can't afford any more. I'm running 8 or 12 core Ivy Bridge CPUs. And I'm like, what can I do with this level of hardware? Turns out quite a bit. I feel like my home lab is doing more with the current level of hardware that I have than I was with the unlimited amount of hardware I had 2 years ago.
Yeah. And you just have to get like more efficient about it. But
yeah,
I don't know. There's some enthusiasm I have for that to push for the struggle. That's part of the reason I started a motorcycle channel. Like, I have a nice house. I can sleep in this nice house, or I can go moto camping with my friend and we can rough it.
Right.
We're going to inconvenience ourselves because we can.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. But that's another topic for another day.
Yep.
I think we're going to wind this one down.
Exactly. Thank you all so much for watching episode 422. I hope this was a nice getaway for a while. And maybe we'll do more of this. Because I'm as tired of the downtrodden, woe is me, the world is ending news as anyone else. And look, we did this during COVID for a while where we went, you know what? We're not going to talk about COVID. We're not going to talk about negative news. We're going to talk about what's fun. We're going to talk about family. We're going to talk about newest brews that we've tried. We're going to liven things up a bit. And I really feel, number one, that's what I need right now. But number two, I think a lot of people also need that. And, you know, Tom, you kind of proved my point when I said, hey, you know, hey, let's start the notes tonight. Can we do like non-dystopian? And Tom goes, I don't know if I can.
Yeah, I don't know if I can.
I'm not finding anything right now.
You just slapped me with this one. I think we pulled it off, though. We had fun. We had fun with all of you. Thank you, all of you, for being here and joining us. This is a great time.
Absolutely. Still love you, Brett. shout out to Ray Dahl.
He's great. We had fun at his expense.
Yes, exactly.
We'll go chat with him on Discord.
Shout out to Ray Dahl. Maybe we'll get. You know what? Maybe I'll get him on in this next month, and we'll shoot the crap with him. That might be fun.
Brett is a genuinely nice guy.
He really, yeah. But anyway, thank you so much for watching episode 422. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't done so already. Hit that like button. Make sure we know that you liked the video. Subscribe to Tom Lawrence, Lawrence Systems, over on YouTube. Link should be down in the video description. Tom, anything good of the order before we close? Anything you want to pitch? Yeah. Or
check out my Proxmox videos. Learn how to secure it. Watch that video. I put some effort into it.
Yeah.
I actually have a whole write-up. And I mean, part of the problem, I did a write-up and people are just following the write-up and not watching the video. But that's fine, too. I care that you secure your Proxmox backups properly.
Yes.
That's all I really want you all to do. So
watch me learn how to use it. Watch Tom learn how to secure it. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Don't just run everything as root. Just
how dare you.
All right. And maybe I'm gonna download the Star Trek game, so that's positive came out of this too.
Yes, you will like it.
I will see how good it works on Linux.
It works amazingly well. In fact, I played it on the NVIDIA GB10 on ARM.
Okay.
So if it runs on ARM, it'll run on Linux.
That's a beautiful thing.
Exactly. Thank you all so much. And as always, we'll see you next week. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.